raining out
March
here.
March 10th.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, join the club.
Rain.
It was howling in Portland last night.
What
that? It will be this afternoon.
Yes, they say. It's
on your hat.
Really blowing hard. Around 3 or 4 this morning.
Thank you.
All right, everybody have an agenda.
Hurricane.
No. Let's get rolling. Oh, yeah. I want to complete this by noon today.
Thank you.
I want to get some work done this afternoon.
Work?
Yeah, well.
Where did you find this?
I was going through my stacks, and I thought that was kind of fun.
This is amazing. Yeah.
1974 Lomo turbine test.
Long on Oceana. Yeah. Yeah.
I love the graphics.
It's like the Holding Gates.
Yeah. All right, so on the agenda, anything to add?
Yes.
Besides Gary.
Yeah.
Damn it, I am just going to go back to my office. What the hell am I here for?
You say that every week.
I know. One of these days.
You're going to go back to the office.
One of these days, I'm just going to show up for work. Ulicon County.
Ulicon County.
Bonneville Dam.
Oh, man.
Hmm?
Oh, great.
And let's talk about marine mammal mark observations and developing some consistency and reporting on marine mammal observations among all of our things that are going on out there.
Came today.
Hey, I think I'm going to go back to my office.
Standardization of marking marine mammals?
There won't be anything that you have to worry about.
What do you mean by that?
Of observations.
Well, of observations. What we're looking for is for the count program to standardize observations, and then also any researchers or anything that we have. People using our facilities for research should be reporting in a consistent way, and we need to think about how we do that. So,
okay. We'll put that on the agenda.
Do you have extra agendas?
Marine mammal marks. I don't send them out anymore.
Gotcha. How they assess fish?
Slide it around the horn. Does anybody else want to add to this agenda?
I've joined the conference.
Okay.
I'll think of more later, but that's enough for now. Actually, I have several things for Bonneville Project, too, from the report that Ben just sent out. But I'll just talk about those under somewhere. Updates. As we get to the update section, maybe, or something like that, if they're not already on here.
All right. Good.
So, yeah.
How about if we go around the room so people on the phone can hear who's here? I'll start with myself, Bernard Clout with the Portland District.
Tim Dykstra, Walla Walla.
Tammy Mackey, Portland.
Doug Bouse, Division.
Schwartz, Portland District.
Ed Meyer, No Fisheries.
Shade Scott, Public Power Council.
Robert Stample, Portland Engineers.
Bob Cordy, The Dalles.
David Wills, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Trevor Condor, No Fisheries.
Gary Fredericks, No Fisheries.
Jason Sweet, BPA.
Bill Heblin.
Dave Bender, Fishmaster.
And Houseman is here, but
he's here.
Out of the room. Who's on the phone? We got Greg Moody, and who else?
Steve Richards.
Steve?
Steve.
Good. Okay, anybody else? All right, so we'll get started with the approving the February minutes. Any comments? I'll start with Mr. Wills. Anything for us on approval? Nope.
Good?
Very good. I like that. Doing once, twice.
Approved.
That's how these speed things up. Action items. So 2.11 is the lamprey condition data. Jerry was going to send a guide out to those interested. Any idea of what he's done? We've kind of been punting this one for the past couple of months. Okay, I will actually call him and ask him what's up. I'll say, what up, dog? Got that from a Scooby-Doo movie.
Why is that hanging around in alleys?
Probably.
I'd be like, here, little puppy.
Quoting SpongeBob SquarePants here. So. Yeah.
The Dalles low forebay request. RCC is going to implement this operation early March. Where are we at on that?
It's done.
It's done. Completed.
It's done. And it it went forward, and it did not drop below the 158 as discussed. So. so the operation is completed.
Nice job.
Any discussion on that?
Nope.
Okay. We'll talk about the quarter collector operation with Dennis in the regular agenda. So we're going to punt that one down. 1, 4, 5, and 6 are actions that are completed. Then we can get right into 2.2, just like that.
All right. 2.21, McNary Emergency Bypass Operations. I've reminded Ryan, he's going to have something for us. He's been a little distracted by outfall planning, but we will have something, and I would expect to send something out to you probably next week, but I still don't have it, as far as drawings of McNary Emergency Bypass.
Okay. That's not a big deal.
Sockeye, the line that we were going to use for sockeye counts, haven't heard anything specifically from Idaho on this. We'll have to follow up with a call to Russ. So I don't have anything to report on that. 2.23, McNary concurrent ladder outage. Remember, we discussed this last month, and I can tell you things turned out well at McNary. We coordinated some room with the hopes that we wouldn't have to use it, but the Washington Shore was in operation in criteria on February 28, and the Oregon Shore was in operation on March 2nd. So we had coordinated it that it could be out for an extra week, but we didn't need that.
Good.
So there was only one day, that was March 1, where the Oregon Shore was out of service. But the screens, the new traveling screens, are now in. There are rails that were being installed for cameras to be mounted for this the study, and those are also installed. So McNary, as far as fish ladders go, is looking good in criteria and in operation.
Is that study going forward, or did that get delayed? Or
yeah, it is moving forward. Yeah. So that was the last piece we needed to get those rails installed. We still don't have the cameras installed, but the big thing was getting the rails installed. The cameras are easy.
You don't see any outages associated with those, or
no.
The night?
The only thing on that, there was going to be one, and I need to confirm this with Ann, like a very short outage of that attraction flow at night to just get the cameras. The day outage would have been install the rails, but now with the rails are in, cameras are easy. So, and then 2.24, the Warshak dewatering plan that has been sent on to Idaho Power, to Phil Groves and
Jim Chandler.
Jim Chandler.
Any response?
No.
No response.
What the hell sent this for?
So.
Yeah, whatever.
It's your request, Gary.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll follow up with Jim so it can be an action item. I worked with Jim on relicensing. So
we just wanted to be aware.
Yeah.
So happen to them too.
It has been sent, but I do want to make sure that we have a discussion to actually communicate what was going on, why it's important that they're at least aware of this.
Right.
So it's been sent. I'll follow up with a phone call. And the other action items will be discussed later.
We are cruising. It's a record. Less than 15 minutes.
I think I have another couple of agenda items.
Don't worry. We'll slow down here.
I'm thinking of them right now.
Okay. Into updates 3.
Chief Joseph.
Walla Walla's going to now
start
it off.
Cooling water strainers, I'm not going to read those anymore.
Dang.
So.
One more time.
Every time I do it, I always get eye rolls, and so
I'm gonna start throwing stuff.
So, well, they're posted. Is that good?
Yeah.
Good job.
Everything's on the website. How's the website's
majority rules? I'm the only one that's interested in it.
3.1.
I have a handout for you.
Thanks.
Yep.
Next.
3.1, 2. Actually. We're going to discuss that agenda item 5. So, moving on to 3.13 is just so you're aware, turbine unit 10 at McNary, it blew a stator coil, and because of that, it was there's it could be out of service for a long time. I don't know the status of it right now. It's being investigated.
Capacity just got less.
What's that?
Your measly capacity of that powerhouse just got less.
Yeah. So repairs are going to be at least 3 weeks, but then there's double testing needed, and this also might cause it to be the next unit at McNary that undergoes a rewind. So that's why I say it's out at least for 3 weeks, and it could be for quite a while.
No special.
That's not an
use
stat.
Of that particular unit, other than the fact that you get dry gas out of it.
Well, with 3 weeks, they must have be able to repair the stator in place, because if it's bad enough, you gotta
can't take it apart.
No, so no. They must be able to replace some bars. Is it just a small part of the stator?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So right. How long are you saying that? It's going to be
saying 3 weeks.
Well, it's out at least 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Yeah,
okay. With the potential that it could be out for months to a year.
Yeah.
So.
You
have
11 all over again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be bad as 11.
So I will let you know. This is just kind of the first.
We actually have people to work on it.
They don't fuss with contracting.
Walk past 11, there's nobody left.
So, anyway.
What unit is that?
10.
I'm not allowed to. I'm on a special list. And
well, the issue would be spill.
I mean,
I saw that on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So.
Who's the lead on that?
I don't know.
Okay. I'll find out.
I mean, it's really not an issue.
No.
So we need to just track it and then change the unit priority if need be.
Yeah, well, I mean, the unit priority is written so that if anything's out of service, we just
move to the next. It's not going to change anything. Okay.
So
there's no performance test this year.
No.
Nothing going on, so it's just FYI.
Yeah.
FYI.
Then 3.14 ESBS installation at McNary. I'm only bringing this up because we haven't talked about it for a while, but we are planning to do the same thing that we have done the last 2 years, which is install ESBSs at McNary starting not earlier than April 5 and not later than April 15. So that's the window that we're shooting for. There is, and I'm trying to remember, there's 2 units that are out of service right now. And in talking to the field crews, they would like to install ESBSs on those 2 units that are already out of service and start that on Monday, the 4th. And
I told units them, 1 and 4, Tim.
Yeah, units 1 and 4. No problem, since they're not going to be operated anyway. So ESBSs will be installed on units 1 and 4.
And they're not operated?
Greg?
They're out of service for rewinding right now.
So that's 3 units out of service. And I don't know what the river flow is up there, but it's about the 250 at Bonneville.
Yeah.
So you guys have got spill, involuntary spill going on right now.
So yeah, there's quite a bit there, actually.
There is. Yep.
Okay.
So next is LOMO RSW status. And I provided just a brief update last month where I said we had a report, and I tried to show pictures, and I think some people could at least see the pictures I had on my laptop, that some of those transition plates were uneven. So there's those 5 transition plates, OG transition plates, and one of them, the biggest gap, plate number 5 was 3.5 inches off the concrete, off the OG. And so when you looked at a picture, you could see all the plates were at some angle, and it didn't look good. I've learned a little bit more as to what's going on there. One thing is, it wasn't like that during the season, because when folks looked at it right after spill season ended, the plates were flush. What happened was the RSW was then detached and stayed detached for like a week, and then they reattached it. And I think they had to, they maybe did a small debris spill. So there was some water that went over the RSW after the spill season. And after that, they noticed that's when the plates were off. And so what we learned was, and what we think happened was, during that time when it was detached and then attached back to the dam, some debris got stuck in between the seals, causing water to press up underneath the transition plates, just like it happened at Ice Harbor. The good thing is, at Lomo, the transition plates were just off kilter a little bit. Where at Ice Harbor, if you recall, we actually lost two of those transition plates. And so, the good news is since then we've rocked the RSW back, gone in. We were able to see what looked like a big pile of debris that was stuck in there, which we think caused that those uneven transition plates. We since when we rocked it back, we then spilled out of that bay to clear debris and reattached the transition plates and put it back in position, and now the transition plates are back to looking flush again after they've been re-adhered, reattached. So the good news is we think we're in good shape for the Lomo RSW. The other piece of information is we're now taking a look at and rewriting our SOP for how these RSWs are operated. And bottom line is, anytime you rock that RSW back, you've got to spill. You've got to spill to clear debris before you reattach it. So I'm working with the project to rewrite that SOP so that we have either spill to clear the RSW or divers that can inspect before it's reattached, but somehow we need to clear that debris.
So,
yeah.
So when it was reattached, it wasn't getting a complete seal on the OG. Is that right?
It wasn't getting a... Okay, this is the face of the dam. Yeah. The RSW came up and attached, and when it attached, there was some debris stuck at this... where it attaches.
Oh, where it attaches on the forebase,
right,
face of the dam.
Okay. Yep, which then allows water to get underneath
it, yep,
and press under on okay. the bottom side of those okay. transition plates. And so I think this was a good... I mean, this turned out, I think, as good as it could, where we didn't have any fish encountering uneven transition plates. It's been solved, but we're now looking at rewriting that SOP so that this doesn't occur again. So, yeah. Yep. So I don't know. To me, it's encouraging that we at least have a much better handle on why it was like that and how we know how to avoid it in the future. There's still some details that we're working through, like getting concurrence from our structures folks that you can actually spill out of that RSW bay when. Because there's really three positions for that RSW. There's attached, there's fully resting on the bottom of the forebay, and then there's a position where essentially it's buoyant, and that's the position that the project likes to keep it. Just it's easier for them to operate and easier for them to work around. What we're working with our structures folks is to make sure that you can actually spill when it's in that midpoint on its so not fully attached and not fully on the bottom. So we're still working through some things with our structures folks to make sure we're not causing some RSW damage when we do spill.
So when do you think you're going to have your new SOP out?
By the end of March.
Alright,
so
bring it to next meeting.
So alright, that's Lomo RSW. Little Goose, update on this, as you recall, we had NSE3 and NPE3. Both those bulkheads were flopping around and broken and causing problems. And so the plan was this winter to take those bulkheads out and not even install a new bulkhead, but just permanently cement them shut. They are now permanently cemented shut, and everything looks fine. The ladder's in operation. And so that was a successful project, and the folks did a really good job in finalizing that. Okay. Lower Granite, RSW status. Greg, do you have anything else on Lower Granite?
No, Tim, I don't.
Okay. So this is one I was hoping to have some more information by this morning, but essentially we're still having the problem of rocking that back. It's attached to the dam right now and will be in operation for this spill season. That's the good thing. The bad thing is we still have a problem with the sensor that when you start to rock it back, my understanding is when you start to rock it back, the sensor is responding as if it's in free fall, which then it corrects itself and it isn't possible to sink it at this time.
Oh, it is. Just put some big holes in it.
Well, it's not functioning properly. It will be attached to start the spill season, but the problem is here, you know, in the event of approaching flood stage, when you have to detach that, we could do some things to sink it, but it might make it difficult to operate again. So, yeah, right. So we're still working on that, and I'll have some more information for you when I get it, but that's a status update. Um, 3.19 adult fish trap at Lower Granite. Just want folks to be aware it's in operation now and started back in service on March 7. 3.110 is just, I wanted to quickly go down our fish ladders, and we coordinated a bunch of different events where we could have some ladders out of service longer than normal. And I can tell you kind of the bottom line is we coordinated for a longer period where we could be impacting fish passage with a ladder being out of service. In all instances, all ladders were in place and in criteria no later than March 2nd. So we needed less time than we had coordinated, which we'd like. That's you kind of getting the theme. If we coordinate something, that doesn't mean that we're always going to take that long, but I'd like to coordinate it and have those impacts be less rather than coordinate it again and when the impacts are more. So,
you
bank
that.
Yeah, that's right. So, and I'll just quickly run down. I already told you McNary, Washington Shore was in service February 28th. Oregon Shore in service March 2nd. Ice Harbor, North Shore ladder was in service in January, and the South Shore ladder was in service on March 2nd. That it worked out really well. We have diffuser gratings that one of the diffuser gratings had popped loose and wasn't attached, and we were able to get a dive team in, use some J-bolts to reattach the diffuser grating, and it's now back in place. That caused a one-day delay, so March 2nd. Lomo. What's that?
Did you use the Army dive?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Lomo, North Shore was...
Are they better than the Navy?
Well, they're both about the same, but they're cheap.
Cheaper.
Yeah. You don't want them doing a complicated long job, but they do quick, good, fast stuff.
Yeah, it worked out. Lomo, North Shore was in service in January. The South Shore, we had coordinated with folks and heard comments back that folks approved the installing of the pit tag antenna for Lamprey. That was coordinated, and that ladder was back in service March 2nd, so less time out of service than we had expected. Little Goose, because of the NPE3 and NSE3 work, we coordinated that could be out a few days longer into March. It was back in service on March 2nd. And Lower Granite was back in service in mid-February. So, all in all, ladders are all back in service and operational.
Tammy has all those dates in the notes, right?
No. I said Dykstra read off each ladder and when it returned to service. Would you like those dates in the notes?
If one were interested, either for this year or in historical years, is that information recorded anywhere that's easily obtainable?
In the annual fish passage report.
Okay.
Yeah. Navlock returned to service Lower Snake March 15, and for McNary March 17. So we're getting close to returning traffic up and down the river.
Is the Lower River still out?
What's that?
The Lower River still out? John Dan.
The Dells will come back until the 25th.
Yeah, I think they're later.
Yep. The Dells is always kind of a slow project.
All right. 3.112. Yeah, we're just exercising our option here. Continue transport. Number 13 is just a reminder: we are moving our transport trucks are going to Dworshak Fish Hatchery, and we're releasing fish a week early from Dworshak Fish Hatchery, and outplanting those will give us a window where we can fix a valve that's been open and non-functional at the hatchery. It's been essentially unable to close this valve, which is letting out a huge volume of water. I don't remember the exact gallons per minute, but it's huge. And it's been like that for, I just learned a couple months ago, that it's been like that for almost 20 years.
Huh. Well, now you're going to change the hydrograph up there.
So we were on a tour, and I was pointed out, happened to be on a nice congressional tour when it was pointed out that it had been
that's usually the time they come
broken for 20 years, and so yeah, we now have a plan in place to fix that. So
basically, just to clarify, they've got to get rid of all the fish because they're going to shut down the water supply completely to the hatchery to get in there and fix it.
That's always been the hang-up before is, and when I asked the Fish and Wildlife Service folks, why has it not been fixed? Well, there's no way to fix it because you always need water into the hatchery, therefore you can't ever get in there to dewater because there's never a time where you don't need water. So by releasing these fish a week early, we're
Must
providing
that
window.
Must not have had a big effect on the hatchery, though.
What's that?
Must not have had a huge effect.
Well, what it does is it just
keeps the water fresh.
You have to constantly pump a ton of water, which is just a real waste of energy.
It keeps the water fresh.
Yeah, that it does.
So, Tim, that release date will be 21-25 March, is that?
Yeah.
That's the release date?
Now we'll see all kinds of diseases.
Which valve is this?
The monitors, well, there's a lot of different valves, but it's a big valve that all the water has to flow through it as it's going back to the river. And we're finally going to be able to get that closed.
So it actually will become a valve then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It'd be nice. And last update, video fish counting started at Lower Granite and Bonneville, Washington Shore, Bradford Island. That started on March 1. It continued at Bonneville.
Yeah, Bonneville's been going
continued at Bonneville. It started March 1
that's
at
why
Lower
I was
kind of
wondering why that was in here, but...
And with that,
no news.
Brian?
Tim, way to go. All right. 3.2, Portland updates. 3.2.1 is bottom leaving observation zones. Looks like, Ben, you've got the next four. You want to tell us about your bottom leaving observation zones?
I'll try. I don't know if anybody's interested in this besides Mr. Fredericks, but here's what we thought.
I'm sure Nathan is. Okay.
Yeah, I talked to Nathan about it.
Good.
And he's figured if we did it or they did it, and with it in the future, there'd be something similar to those.
Yep, that's yours.
If that works for folks. We just wanted something we could have that wouldn't be so far down, or extend so far down that we had to change the way we were doing stuff.
No, you don't. I wasn't expecting that. Especially you can see from your normal inspections.
Okay.
So you don't have four bay here. Is that not concerned about that?
Not really. I mean, we could do four bay.
The only thing, well, BGS is gone, so that's the end of the Cremer out roost.
Get rid of that.
We got the risers and stuff, but really, you don't see much of anything that it's not.
No.
It's just zeros.
I don't think we really see a little bit of
mergansers.
Yeah, you'll see a little bit there along the log boom.
Fish
exit.
Osprey.
Yeah, you'll see some osprey action at the corner collector, but it's...
We don't care.
No, I think it's pretty minimal.
Okay. It doesn't matter. I have Walla Walla. The Dalles and John Day have got theirs pretty well set up already, too. So we got Portland District. What about...
I missed part of that.
You weren't paying attention?
I was looking at Tammy's hat, to be honest with you.
That is pretty fascinating. You better wonder where she got it.
Thank you, Mary Boppin.
That's an umbrella. Okay, well, I can't compete with that, I know.
You have to take your hat off.
I'll start over again. Tammy, would you... I need Tim's attention.
Well, at least she doesn't have that head, so it's
different. Okay, I'm just asking about Walla Walla District. Have you guys, because I did ask when I asked about this for the entire system, not just for Portland District.
For getting
consistency and observations of avian predation in the four bays and tail races, where we think there may be issues. The idea is that we do need to apply additional hazing measures or whatever, we want to be able to know about that sooner than later. So that was the idea. And so when the guys are out doing their inspections, rather than just saying, "Oh, there's a bunch of birds out there," they could partition that out a little bit. It doesn't have to be super detailed.
Yeah,
Gary, there's zones that they've set up here in the for avian predation hazing and observations, and it's done on a daily basis for their observations and quantifications of birds, where they're at, locations, and stuff like that.
So they've standardized some set of zones or whatever for the biologists when they go out on their inspections. They know they assign that to certain areas?
There's been some level of that has been standardized. I'll try to get you some better handouts and really be more prepared for that discussion next month.
Okay, and when they're doing their reports then, are they reporting? I haven't gone through all the reports to look at this, but reporting their observations.
Yes, and
it is.
They are recording their observations. Yes,
in the weekly reports.
Just a little statement, as you see in the weekly reports, where the birds were. But if we need to beef that up,
what I'm trying to do that. Yeah. What I liked was Cordy's approach. You know, looking at what those guys are doing up there and thinking, that's a good way to do that. That's a good, consistent.
There's just been...
Well, we need to look at this.
We'll take a closer look at it. There's an email string that actually has been furthered. Even this morning I saw an email on this, in getting this better coordinated amongst the sites. So I don't feel like we're at our end point yet.
Okay.
I'll have more of an update for you next month.
Just asking.
I know that there's been, we're working on kind of being able to digitally record some of that information, and we're still kind of working that process yet.
I mean, it can be simple, piece of paper, you know, there's 10 over here and there's 10 over there, and then record that on a weekly basis, and we have something then at the end of the year we can look at. So we need to apply additional, you know, hazing measures, and we'll have that information. That's what I'm after.
I got it.
And if down the road we see there's nothing going on, then we can drop it. That's what we do.
That's what our plan is, Gary. But we'll have some better information for you next month.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Any more discussion?
Thanks, Ben. This looks good. Okay. And if we start seeing it, this is just a waste of time. Then we can drop it. But for a while, I'd like to do it. You know, a year or two, just to see what we see out there. See if there's any additional.
Wait till Ben retires.
Well, I don't know. He'll be around a while.
I don't have.
Do you have plans?
No.
Okay.
I don't have good news on the rest of these, I don't think. Spill bay 15 hoist is
still out.
Unfortunately, it was placed under the 2013 budget.
Oh,
this past week for $225,000, I believe.
$225,000? Was that Burns' idea?
No, I have nothing to do with that. And but I will put on the UFR list and see what we can do about it.
Is there any way to bump this to CRFM?
What's the cost?
$225,000.
Okay. $2 million?
No,
$250,000.
Yeah, you can put it in.
If you guys want to put on CRFM, we can rank it on ST and maybe move the signal faster, because 2 years of, and especially at a high flow year like this year, that's not going to be the most ideal for that. And then the low flow years also.
Well, if we go to a fixed spill rate, it's not as bad, except when you exceed spill and that rate, and then you have to move things, so you don't keep your pattern.
So let's,
it falls apart a little bit. It's usually once you get over about 130, 140 Ks, and that needs to move another foot.
Yeah, at least it's on it, though. It's not like you've got a hole in your pattern.
No, it's running.
It's just a little weak.
I'm more worried about getting more gates out. Yeah. I mean, the precedent here is not good. That gate's been out for how many years now?
Three.
Is it three now? Wow.
Three.
We're trifecta.
3 years, and so if we get another one that
and
goes.
And it'll be up into two. So five, half decade.
Let's go for 10.
That's good.
And we'll do our best.
Well, here 20 years.
We can make Rorschach's record. We'll be okay.
So when are they going to open Bay 17?
225.
Since Bill starts
like
on a Sunday,
much,
are they
going to
come out
with money from CRFM for this kind of thing? I mean, this is O&M.
No, you can't.
No, I thought they.
Unless you can justify this.
I mean, unless we.
Mitigation for spill.
It is, and can be, but I still wonder about
O&M. Automatically, but they couldn't close it.
You'd almost have to say that it was.
We can try.
But it's out of service because of the spill, the spray has corroded it due to, I don't know,
acid in the river or whatever. Yeah, or some of the Superfund site above the.
I'll try, but I'll definitely put it on our UFR list. And then Monday morning. FY11.
I've got a few more of those I want to bring up.
We'll just have
to get it.
The
change form. We'll coordinate it now.
Yeah.
What's the lead time on that? The 225, what's it going to go to? Just purchase of parts?
Yeah, it's just the motor repair.
So if I have end-of-year funds, can we go ahead and just have a contract in place?
We can. It's got a ridiculous lead time. I don't know if you remember what that was.
It's half a year to a year.
To get the parts, though.
No, it's a contractor that's redoing it.
It wasn't that long.
It gets shipped down to a contractor.
So it's the contractor's schedule that's...
It's like 15 weeks or something like that.
What gets shipped? The motor?
The motor.
The motor gets shipped off to a contractor and comes back.
They rebuild the motor.
And I think if we didn't pay extra, it was 30 weeks or something like that, but we could try and speed it up depending upon the contractor's workload.
I think that's 32 weeks or 16, something like that.
Yeah.
So what's the project's view of the other motors?
There's some others that only have a single braking system, which is what that one had. That's the risk. I don't know. I mean, they don't have
any.
There's a similar problem.
They expressed the risk when we start talking about the analysis of why we don't want to be opening up, jogging these gates around. So I think you're going to get more life out of them, camping them. Right. But if they do go, they'll probably be the first to fail just because of the oldest generation.
That's that first generation but it's those are like done in the 50s or something like that.
So when and if this motor gets rebuilt, is it going to be, you mentioned single brake, but that's not a good thing. Is this going to be upgraded in any sense or nothing?
It's the same style.
Same old thing. Same.
And that's in part why we have limited funding, because it's not a betterment or improvement. It's
just fixing the old.
That's what was there.
All right.
This wouldn't even be fish money anyway, would it?
Yeah.
Well, no,
reason we open and close it.
This is an O&M. This is O&M money right now.
It's right? O&M, but I mean, it doesn't even fall into Fish and Wildlife. I know. It didn't have to Dallas.
Really?
No.
No. Just go away.
Yeah, I don't think it does. That's great.
Until somebody tells
us. So are you putting that in the 13 ENS budget?
No, it's still different.
Or is it going in?
Safety valve. Dam safety.
Should be in hydro.
I think it is, actually.
Okay, so we got years.
So you need to decide if you want to open Monday morning, May 17th.
School starts on Sunday.
Starts on Sunday.
Is it okay to open it on
Monday? Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Who's that?
April 10th, couldn't have planned it.
Till Friday would have been better.
Yes, Friday.
Friday. Or can you get guys to come in and open it on Sunday?
So you're talking about, wait a minute, okay, so you're talking about April, once we get into the spill season, April 10th.
We got to open Bay 17. Since it doesn't have the automatic hoist, we need a crew to come in and open it.
So it's in, this broken hoist, which is 15, is in 17 now.
We might have people there doing corner collector, or it might already be open, it's hard to say.
Okay. This is an issue, but I haven't seen anything about it. No paperwork or anything, no request, no.
No, it's right here. Because nobody ever thinks about it until we get to this point.
Right here, where?
What are you guys talking about?
Opening May 17. Well, Spill Bay Hoist 15, and I figured this would be part of the conversation, is that Spill Bay 17, which has the hoist over it, cannot be operated.
This is Spill Bay 15 hoist. It's in Bay 17.
Correct.
You can't operate it because when spill starts, because it's outside the project's work schedule. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I asked Ben if he can get people in on Sunday to open it. And if he can't, Monday morning
or Friday, it would be out for a period of time when we're spilling.
Instead of 0001. It would come open probably at 0800.
Right.
The next day.
So it's not running by itself.
So it'd be, there'd be a hole for 24 hours.
Yeah.
20, 30 hours.
One hole. A one gate hole.
So you'd have a 3.5K hole.
Maybe you need to have an automated hoist on that thing.
Yeah. You might need it.
3.5K hole.
So do you want to see if they can come in on Sunday first? I mean, if they were going to open the corner collector every day.
I think when the spill program starts, you need to have that open.
That will be our first.
And I'm assuming it's the corner collector is running in the water.
Yeah.
What?
Same story every year.
Fix it. That is fish passage season.
But I don't know, this is somewhat relevant, but the instructions we've given out to the projects is the same instruction that we've given over the past several years, which is spill starts on the date at 001.
001.
As far as the TSWs, those can't be open from the control room. So we spill the percent or the amount prescribed, but those weirs don't get opened until the following morning. Like with daylight around before 8 o'clock in the morning. So that's what we've done every year in the past, mm-hmm. and that's what we're planning to do this year. But the glitch this year is it's a Sunday, so projects aren't real.
So they set up the pattern that you've developed for spilling without a TSW.
Right.
Then once the TSW starts, you modify the pattern to the TSW pattern.
That's right.
I think that's what it's a little different. Yeah, I'd recommend that bottom level. Just spill your 100K and then fill in the hole on Monday morning. Put a couple extra stops and a couple of days in there.
You still have the hole. I mean, that's every year. Every year. So I see that as that's appropriate. But in this case, where we have a broken thing, I'm not so sure it's the same rationale.
I would say at least on Sunday morning.
Well,
Gary, can we have the concession?
Good reason to have somebody be out there on Sunday. Open the damn thing.
Sunday morning, rather than Sunday at midnight.
Sunday morning instead of midnight, not having a rigging crew out there.
Yeah, it's worse to have it running by itself.
Well, what I'm saying is open up the spillway, leave Bay 15 closed until the rigging crew comes in at 6:30 and opens it. So it'd be nice to have the crew working in the light because they've got to move the main gantries and stuff.
They got to move the gantry down.
Yeah,
from
it's just
safety.
It's a major safety thing.
I don't think they're going to. Well, do we have a crew on Sunday or not?
I think, on Sunday, but
Sunday morning.
6:37, not
right.
Right. So 100, what you're proposing is a 100K spill would begin at 0001.
Right.
Hours.
The queue would be the same.
Minus that bay, but the full amount.
Yeah, you still spill 100K.
We'll
move it somewhere. Yeah. Wherever we all come up with some place.
Yeah, GDAX does it automatically.
Do it.
Huh? GDAX does it automatically. Okay.
And then at daylight, we'll open it.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
That's fine.
And we'll try to get it fixed at least.
Two decades.
And at the same time, if the corner collector...
before you retire.
And at the same time, if the corner collector isn't open by that time, the corner collector will get open at the same time.
When they're out there, yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah.
All right.
So do we take bets on if this place gets fixed before Tom's trash rack? Trash break.
We're making progress.
Wait a minute. We're making progress on that. That's going to get.
Famous words.
Comes here. All right. So, slow it down. Let's speed it back up a little bit. Let's go.
Grizzlies.
All
right. Just to be quick. No update on Grizzlies. They don't have a fix for it yet. We started at the project and just put it in as kind of a work order to ask folks, on-site folks, to look at it, and then it's going to be a downtown thing for sure, where we want to just have it fixed, whatever that means, so it's more sturgeon-friendly as we take units down. They would make this fix if we take them out there overall, so it would be a long process, obviously, to do the whole powerhouse, but... there's nothing to report on it. Fish unit electrical work is pretty minor. There was some follow-up work to replace some boots. I can give you as much information as you want. Doesn't mean a whole lot to me. Basically, they need to install them. They can do it during the night when we would normally have fish unit down to float trash. They can do it in that same window. Shouldn't impact anything. Will be two nights at the most likely one night at the end of March. If that's okay. Take more time to hang clearances and such, and we'll do the actual work, but we can fit it in.
What was this for?
Just to replace some longer insulating boots on the protective surge arresters.
Okay.
But it really is going to be during the time when we can float the trash. We'll just coordinate it so it's not outside that
off time. Yeah. This has nothing to do with the head gate issue then. That's something different.
No, but I can talk about
girls
that.
Too.
That's later in the agenda.
Yeah, once we get to it. It's later in the agenda. Okay.
Is it down there somewhere? I have an old agenda, so.
The head gate rehab, yeah. It's item 7.
We'll get there.
Maybe. Okay. Sooner or later.
All right.
I've got a. I think I'll interject my other Bonneville issues here.
Number 15. What is it?
Okay, several of them. I'm just going through Ben's report
that
I got this morning, I think, or last night, whenever you sent it out. And there's a few things in here. One is the mechanical velocity meter. That's still out, as you're saying in here. Is that going to be returned to service? Should be this month.
We can definitely get the one back in. They're
in
still
Powerhouse 1.
Yeah. They're still trying to figure out the
where to put the
system on the
Powerhouse 2.
Yeah.
I figured that'd be the case. But it said it was out for repairs. I thought that's probably been done by now. That's probably
that
a holdover.
Should be fixed.
Okay. Good. That should be back in service when we start the season here. SA-24 board. That's been carried along for a while. Is there money?
Yep. As of yesterday.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So
work should start technically today.
So maybe by.
It's a big job.
Month or two? Or 6 months or a year?
We were told it would be done by the end of this FY.
End of the FY. So fall through the year, the fish passage season, we're going to have to go manually with that. Okay.
Yeah. But it's
Good. Well, at least it's on its way.
Yeah, that's they actually designed it. Controls power house to officially
all the houses. So now it didn't run. Just back to me. Yeah. So we're still there.
So we're going to talk about F1 later, so I'll leave that. The floating orifice gates, you said there's a couple of them that are out for maintenance. Yes. Any issues with that, or is that just...
I don't. No, not really.
They're going to be done?
I think they only did maintenance on one as far as getting new seals and doing what they needed to do, but they were going to try these bars, sealant bars and all of them right now.
Oh, yeah.
They want to be able to...
Sounds like they're all installed. Well, no, I guess it's 10 out of 20, not 12.
Yeah, there's two out.
Those two will be back in service yet this year, then, this season?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And then there's the issue of the ice and trash looseway. That's still in, that's going to be talked about later, but what my concern is that it's in, it's not an auto, it's in manual. So, by being in manual, we can still push button operate it, or do we have to change the operator?
No.
Okay. So, operator's got to get out there whenever the floor bin changes. That'll come up later when we talk about this loose-way operation for Kelp.
These are working, the controls just not.
Yes.
Okay. That's. And the other one is later on. So, okay, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. 3.2.5. Okay. Bob, you've got some Zequinox use permit.
Yeah, our environmental guy kind of paved the path for the approval for Zequinox. He's
crossed this out.
Boston DEQ, if we should ever need it. So that's kind of a done deal. And just a reminder, this is not to be used in the fishway. This is strictly for cooling water on the
okay, that was going to ask.
Yeah. Not in the fishway, nor in the distilled water.
Okay.
So is this approved, like, you said the Dalles and John Day?
We just did it through the Dalles.
I mean, so sure it almost just be a district-wide... If things start showing up, everybody's going to want.
You're right.
You know, that kind of thing. So we should at least consider talking about district.
Would that be
Darlin?
That would be Darlin, since he's
no, it would be somebody else. It's Gretchen Kumpel or something. I forget her last name. At PME. She's the new invasive species coordinator.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Okay, what's her name?
Gretchen.
Oh, she's our intern?
Yeah.
You want me to call somebody?
She's the lead. What's that?
You want me to call my wife to get your last name?
Sure.
Can
you do that?
I can. She's at home right now with kids.
Perfect. Okay. If I get the name, I can send her the info we have.
Okay. So this isn't a core-wide... This is just for the Dalles.
This is the first step.
We're looking into it for the Dalles.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Dalles environmental guy.
Really proactive.
We asked him to work on it.
So can you ask him to get a hold of the district POC and coordinate it for district-wide use?
I can, if I find out with the district.
Yep. Can you pass that on to the division and see if this can be something Walla District might have in place?
Hey. Dave, this is Greg.
Yeah,
on the invasive species issue, we've already done our own preliminary studies on invasive species out here and the risk going on here. We're expecting a draft report here in about another week or two from our contractor. But so far, it doesn't look like it's the same type of risk that we see in the lower river right now. So that's just the preliminary results in Walla Walla.
Water quality issues?
Water quality issues, we gave all that to them, but water quality is a chalk scale is what they're looking at,
right.
And it doesn't look like it's
just not
too
calcium.
Bad or especially in the clear water drainage.
Okay. If it's going to come in, it's going to come in from up in Walla Walla first.
Yeah, according to the water quality, it's going to be in the upper watershed of the Snake River first.
They already had that scare.
It was a scare, and that's all it was.
And float all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
So why not have some killing stations on the Walla Walla projects?
the killing stations.
Yeah. Can you send an email out about that?
I want that as a notes.
Which of all our service recommends killing stations.
Killing stations.
Wireless services?
How about
the
electric food barrier?
Of course, that will only work if we eliminate spill.
Alright, we're not going to even go there.
Okay.
Tim's got a couple updates he'd like to add on.
Two other quick items. When we were talking about hoists, Little Goose is still scheduled to get a hoist installed at the surface weir, but it's likely to not be happening during the 2011 fish season. So when we're thinking about Little Goose adult passage issues, we should be assuming that we will not have a weir all spill season. We'll not have a hoist all spill season for the weir. So, all right.
After all of that.
And then the other item was just an email that I saw that came across that the process formerly referred to as COPS has undergone a name change.
Oh, thank God.
It is now
much better. You changed the name.
This is going to be.
Yeah, you're gonna like it. It's now called the Configuration and Operation Plan for Meeting Juvenile Performance Standards. And there's no acronym that even.
I'm trying to write it out here, but I'm lost. Just say it again.
Configuration and Operation Plan for Meeting Juvenile Salmon Performance Standards.
Wow.
And I see you
cops.
So
miserables.
Lamprey. Well done. Lamprey, you're stinking Lamprey. Nice. How many emails do you want me to forward on to you that I'm going to be getting about this one?
I'm just.
There's already been a bunch.
I'm just reading off the email string that included so division.
You've got this acronym that's about seven characters long. You can shorten it to COP. Oh, cop.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not telling you that this was my idea. I'm just.
This is illegal.
Yeah, you can call it. Yeah.
You've got Fenerwick to make sense. You can make this.
Yeah, we'll come up with something. But anyway, we'll still know what you're talking about when you refer to them as cops. But. All right, and that was it. I thought you would enjoy that.
Yeah.
No, I think the.
You saw the cops.
I think the thought on for cops is just there's been a lot of discussion about lamprey and the point is lamprey are not excluded from cops because they would any project that would be implemented to benefit juvenile salmonids as you're striving to meet performance standards. However, before any of those projects would move forward, it has to pass through that filter screen of are there negative or are there other impacts to other species, other life stages that would be negative? And if the answer to that is yes, so in other words, if something that's being discussed does have a negative impact to lamprey, then it could be kicked out or moved down the list. So it's not that lamprey are being ignored.
They haven't been all along.
Right. But the point is, the focus of the COPS, here's the simplest way I can say it, is COPS are the place to solve problems for juvenile salmonids and to help meet performance standards.
Only the name has changed.
We have a different process to help identify problems for lamprey, adult and juvenile lamprey, and that's the 10-year working group. It's moving forward on doing good things for lamprey. So there's the place where we're trying to solve lamprey problems. And we're not moving forward and implementing those lamprey fixes and without including salmon, because if something negatively impacts salmon in the process of that, well, then it would get kicked out or moved down the list as well. So, but the point is, you have a process to solve lamprey problems, and it's the lamprey work group. You have a place to solve juvenile salmon problems, and it's in the process formerly known as COPS. There you go.
The process formerly known as COP.
Just that's what we'll just call it.
A little symbol.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't the federal government great?
Wow. All right.
So you
streamlined everything.
All bases are covered.
So better.
Is it clear now?
It was the same clearness before.
Yeah.
We'll wonder why we can't order a motor in 3 years.
Because you didn't rename it. Because you didn't rename it.
Rename it.
Then you wonder why we can't.
The motor formerly, or the...
the hoist formerly known as.
The hoist. Is the motor.
That's what we'll do. Motor.
Excellent. We'll try it. You never know.
Yeah, maybe it'll work.
It'll probably work like a charm.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you got to get that hoist.
You got to say it's performance measure. See, that's the key. You got to put the hoist for performance measure refurbished process. Yeah. There you go.
Done.
Dude, that'll get funded immediately.
Yeah.
Ben, put that down.
Okay. Your briefness, brilliance.
So who got the award for renaming cops?
Wawa.
Wawa.
Again. Because somebody up there got it. You know, and somebody said, well, we need to rename this.
If we need this process.
You'll get the memo.
Hey, it's not my reward to obtain. I'm just passing it along.
Kill the messenger.
All right, we're going to move on now. Okay, everybody, get your little snacks. We're at the 10 o'clock here. We're going good. Take a breath, because we're going into research. This is where the good stuff comes down today. First one is 3-1, John Day, North Fish Ladder, South End of Bulkhead. There's a coordination form from Sean. He's up in Walla Walla today. I haven't looked at it.
Basically, the project will move forward as coordinated in that coordination form. And that form, if you're not familiar with it, is posted to the web, so you can pull it up and look at it.
And you can get most of the information on the web these days.
And then the TDA winter operations.
We have gate 1, 2, and 3, and 18-1-2 open. Right now.
5 gates.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for doing that. And we'll go right into the Bonneville Kelt study. Dennis is here to go through all the great matrices and handouts that he's going to provide. Because
so early in the week, I sent out just kind of a quick Excel spreadsheet.
And is this the one you sent out last night?
This is the one I just sent out this morning. I just got this. The data that I'm handing out right now has a bunch of pages broken out. Release times, fish of the release, maladies and injuries, recovery times, and there's two different tables for powerhouse 2, predation, suspected predation, and likely predation split out. So. Got one extra here if anybody can't stand it.
Heavily needs one, probably.
Okay.
Nope, we've got one.
Got one?
Nope,
okay.
We're good.
So I think let's go through the preliminary information because I think people are most interested in that, and then we can talk about the metrics. We tried to achieve at least 100 fish out at both routes. So I'm talking from the front page, which is the preliminary findings, including the likely predation. Okay, so this includes 100 fish released, recaptured alive at Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2, or 98 and 96. Recovered dead were 0. Number assigned dead are appropriately notated at the bottom. Either fish were likely preyed upon, or the fish were free of down the maladies. There's a fish were free of injuries and maladies. So after 1 hour survival, both passage routes were almost equal at 98-99%. Standard errors were reached. Our confidence intervals were extremely tight. We only lost one fish during holding from the B2 corner collector releases after 48 hours survival of holding. Number examined for maladies were 98 and 96 fish. Numbers without maladies were only minus one for each. On the maladies page, which is in the second page of the handout, that has just says table at the top. Each one of the first fish was out of the Bonneville Ice and Trash Sluice Way, had a bruised head above the left eye. It was on one fish. It was still alive after 48 hours, but it had a visible bruise. The second fish was released through the corner collector, had a torn right upper, and it was dead after 48 hours. Any questions about that? So the malady rates for both releases, both shoots, was at 99%.
I have a question.
Yep.
So on Appendix D, under the ice and trash sluice way, you have two fish on there. It says one fish unrecovered due to radio tag failure, and then fish was removed from analytical sample. And then if you go to the corner collector and you look at that,
the B2 corner collector one?
Right. Uh-huh. You have one fish unrecovered free for no radio tag, radio signal received, basically the same thing. But those three fish are not removed from the sample. So is there a reason why you didn't remove those fish and you removed the ice and trash fish?
The ice and trash fish, the first, are we talking about that first fish up here on top?
Yeah, the first one, and then there's one, the last one that's listed under March 1 release.
Okay, let me look here. Oh, one fish unrecovered due to radio tag failure.
Ersich?
Have joined the conference.
The one fish that we knew, this first fish, on the ice and trash sluice way, which was released on March 1st, that fish I know was removed from the sample due to the radio tag not working before they released it. It finally could not get a signal on it. They said they're just going to get it out because it's either going to die by the time or just get it out. So I said just release it. The one fish that was unrecoverable due to radio tag failure and removed from the analytical sample, I can't speak to that one.
So I just it looks like it changes the denominator of the results and it could potentially influence the results if you're removing them.
One fish.
Yeah. It may not be significant, but.
Yeah, it would remove one fish.
It does change the results.
Yeah. So we'll look at that one fish. The second page, which is the. So if you don't, if you do exclude these fish that, specifically the ones that we think were preyed upon or could be preyed upon, just wanted to see the difference in the results if you remove the, if you leave those fish or you take those fish out of the study. It doesn't change it much at all. Malady free rate stays the same, of course. Number release drops a little bit. You still have 100% survival at 1 hour. Your number dead at holding goes up to zero at powerhouse one and just to one fish at powerhouse two. So this is just taking those fish out that if we lost a signal on the fish, especially ones over at B2, where they had a strong signal and all of a sudden it totally disappeared, speculation is that they got consumed by a sea lion and it just, the signal went dead. We only had one fish that did that over at powerhouse one.
But you're assuming only one predation at powerhouse two.
Yeah.
And two at powerhouse one.
Yeah.
So Dennis?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm reading the front page wrong. It looks like 10% survival at Bonneville and ice and trash and corner collector for 1 hour.
Maybe this is the way.
It's 100.
Yeah. Only one fish.
All I'm saying is,
it's a decimal place issue.
All I'm saying is, it's pretty near wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the one below there, too, for 48 hours.
What does
it
pull up? Question I have.
Yes.
You said about these fish were against the trash. Trapped in trash? What do you
mean
by that? Is that like a trash rat?
No. In the front of Powerhouse 1, if you guys have been there looking at the face of Powerhouse 1, the ice and trash sluice way dumps in the corner over by Unit 1. In this case, over between Units 3 and 4, right up against the face of the Powerhouse, there was a raft of woody debris that was starting to accumulate there. If you remember last week, it was a heck of a week for rain and snow and everything. We were getting a huge amount of debris coming down river. And so this big debris mat, probably, I don't know, 40 feet by 25 or 30 feet, was starting to set up right there. So this small woody debris mat was holding right up against the powerhouse. So we had a couple fish that they came out of the sluiceway, and they popped up over right by this big pile of floating debris. And they were in the debris. You could see them trying to swim around in it. Then you could see the balloons popping through the debris. But because these balloons, the way they were positioned on the back of the fish, they kept their tail up in the air. And so these fish could never get any traction to get out of there. So the one thing we can say in this study is we know that fish was in there. We know it was healthy, quote-unquote, when it got there. And we saw the fish, and so we actually know it's trapped in the debris. Normally, if we were able to shut down the sluiceway and maybe make our way through the debris, we would have salvaged that fish. But because we could see the fish, we knew it was there, that's how we replaced that fish. We took that fish out of the study and replaced it. Because we knew its fate. We knew it was there.
When you had three, they say trapped in trash.
Yeah. And one of those fish, and it just we got confirmation through email, well, Robert's observers, one of those fish that was in the trash, a California sea lion did come over and eat it, you know. So we know if they're floating
with balloons,
station, with a balloon stationary,
trash,
it was going to get eaten, you know.
Doesn't mean anything. To
it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it had a chance to be highly preyed upon just because of the tag. Yeah. So those fish that we could identify that were stuck in the debris, and I think from a research perspective, those fish, for some reason, if they wouldn't have had the tag on them, they wouldn't have ended up in the debris. Secondly, is I think that if I had to look through the process, what happened, maybe those balloons expand a little too soon. A fish came to the surface before it was downstream a little bit, and it got pulled back up the powerhouse. So because the balloons were on its back and maybe they inflated a little bit too soon, that's why it got pulled back up to the powerhouse. So, anyway, that's why we could take those fish and remove them, because we physically had a sight on them and we could yank them out and replace them.
So you did replace them and released three extra fish?
Yes.
There. Okay.
Yeah. That's where we got back up to about 100 fish.
So do we want to talk through the entire issue here? I guess this is it. Nothing else in the
interest. Yeah, there's... Yeah, okay. So if you have any more questions, I was very happy with the study. I think it was surprising to see how little damage there was to fish. I was there all week looking at these fish. You know, they did well. I think I wanted to make sure the group knows these fish were about as representative to a kelt that you can get.
Yeah, I think
they were size, weight, condition. I mean, these are post-spawn fish coming out of Round Butte. You know, as much as you could pull a kelt out of the river, I think these were about as close as you could get.
Were they both spawned? Were they spawned?
Some of them were spawned.
Oh, they were? They're just the males?
Yeah. Some were kelts.
Yeah.
But just males?
Just males. Some of the females were still squirting eggs in the tub. But, I mean, so when it comes to weight and actual animal, comparing apples to apples, I think this is
really
close.
Study for what it was intended to do.
Yeah.
I think what it showed was, surprisingly, there is no difference. So.
Right.
Well, there's very little injury.
Very little injury.
Well,
injury.
Mortality or injury, either one. So, and predation is something you can't look at with this study. Just
right.
Forget it.
Right.
So, from what it was supposed to tell us, it told us. And what it told us was, to me, that there is no difference between the two routes for kelts.
Right.
Did you guys quantify minor injuries like descaling or anything like that? Only just injuries that could affect survival.
I think it was major injuries, and what we tried to do with the study is, when we were there, when they grabbed a fish out of the tub and they put it in the saddle to get ready to put tags on it, they noted every mark on that fish as best as they could before it was released.
So they have before and after
yes.
marks.
Yes.
When did they report that?
You could see the report on that. They didn't dumb it down to say that this fish had, you know, a scratch or hatchery nose before it left.
Right.
I mean, that's all noted in the notes on the sheets.
So but basically what we're looking for is a relative difference between for condition.
Right.
Assuming that there was, that wasn't an issue.
No,
not a minor scratches and things like that.
Report,
yeah. They're going to report. They'll be much more detailed. Right. What I asked them to look at is malady rates that would specifically impact survival, which means torno perks, major bruising, things are majorly obvious. Or a fish that died in the study, I asked them to slit that sucker open and see if it had any internal hemorrhaging.
Right. Well, did they look at anything internal on any of the other?
Not after the 48 hours, unless it was dead. I asked them not to look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. It would be discoloring or.
Yeah. So I will ask them to give us that extra detail. Will be in the final report for you guys.
Okay. Then you have the golden question.
Yeah, the golden question. So, pre-test, we put together quote-unquote a matrix that we kind of wanted to have some decision points made. So we're not spending a lot of time reinventing the wheel on the decision process. So the first one was, I think we wanted to determine whether or not if we had less than a 6% difference between the two, that was the proposed difference, I guess, skew that we would like to see that would maybe quantify a change or a non-change. We wanted to be able to keep it within that range for decision-making purposes. So per Appendix A, if we didn't see anything greater than that or we saw that they were equal, then we could make a decision that says that they're equal, and we could use Powerhouse 1 as a priority starting, I think it's March 1st, whenever we start the fish passage season, when the sluiceway technically would be open for fish passage. And then Powerhouse 1 would stand priority until April 10th, until we start spill.
Right.
So that was the first decision point. The second decision point that's in there is following additional guidance in the fish passage plan for agreed upon trigger point for the B2 corner collector. So, first of all, I'd like to go around the room and talk about the concurrence on switching Powerhouse 1 priority from, and it'll be March 1st through April 10th. I've done all the background work when it comes to impacts to maintenance and units and all that kind of stuff, and the project doesn't have any issues associated with switching Powerhouse priority.
For this year?
For this year or out years.
The out years they can plan for, but this
they
year
can plan
be
for
the
this year there's no impacts for them switching Powerhouse priority.
Okay.
Most of you are aware, flows are completely are way high, and so Powerhouse priority is really
we're
not.
We're running both powerhouses.
We're running both
we'll
powerhouses hot.
First issue.
So first issue, priority, Powerhouse, switch it March 1st through April 10th. And this will have much more of an impact on a low flow year. Because you know that's where you'll rank Powerhouse 1. So Fish and Wildlife Service, let's start with you.
I didn't want to ask.
You don't get to go after Gary. I don't want to ask you first.
Know what I'm going to say? Hell no.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. You're gonna have monitoring over there.
Monitoring
for sea lion activity.
Well, sea lion activity, and it's a good time for Robert to chime in about when monitoring starts, when hazing starts. I don't know that schedule.
We typically start our monitoring early January, and we end in May. So there will be people there. I don't know how many more years, but for a while, monitoring a sea lion situation there.
Well, so what I wanted to bring up, I guess I'll help Dave out here a bit. I think there's two key issues that we don't know much about yet. This study just tells us the conveyance route is safe as best as we can judge it with these fish. What we don't know about is efficiency of the ITS versus the corner collector. We don't know which one's more efficient at passing fish around the turbines. And the other thing we don't know about is tail race egress conditions, although I would assume that the ITS is worse than the corner collector because we designed the corner collector to have good egress conditions with spill. It's not as good without spill. So those are two outstanding issues that I'd caveat. Any response that you get here is that as we learn more about that, we may change our position on this. And I wanted Robert here to talk a bit about egress conditions and about observations of sea lion activity in March in other years when we were running. We've been running the corner collector, the ITS, every March. That's been, so you guys are standing right there on the deck. So they can talk a bit about that. I don't know about the corner collector because of where it's at. Your guys aren't really standing down there. They're up by the deck.
Not on the powerhouse two side, but on the spillway side we can
kind of see what's going on down there. So if you could, Robert, speak to that a little bit, that would be good.
Of course, I've got handouts.
Yay!
Yay, yeah. Great. But basically, long story short, as you know, just last year and this year, we've broken it up into smaller sections. So the second page is all season long, not just March, but it's Chinook and where the Chinook will be in places. And then the first page also has some steelhead broken out specifically, which are typically taken earlier in the March time.
Right.
And again, Powerhouse 1, most of the activity for a sea lion, at least hunting, is in that area. We call it Zone 1, right in the ice and trash chute. And the next one is Zone 4, a little bit farther downstream, and then Zone 7 is far out. So we see a lot of hunting going on in that area. They might pop up in different zones, but they definitely key in on that corner.
Just my short observations, I'm going to say the same thing as far off.
As far as the ice and trash shoot, the Powerhouse 2, we have some sea lions, stars that hang around out there, but they don't appear to be hunting. Or if they do, they're picking up the sturgeons, the stars that are hanging around out there. So I don't, for whatever reason, they're not keying in on it. It kind of makes sense if you think about it. You've got the fishway entrances, the fish are calling, coming all the way up to the dam.
Right.
Then they start looking for entrances, and they've got that natural waterfall going there. So they're keying in on that corner. Whereas the ice and trash chute at the tip of Cascades Island is there by itself, but they can easily pass it and keep going up towards the dam. So we don't see as much predation going on there.
I think that's a key observation. That's something we're going to want to keep an eye on. And if we have to haze more in the area that I stress this way, that's going to be necessary. So we don't want to just be feeding the sea lions.
Directly in that zone, it's somewhat unaffected because you've got all that splashing stuff going on.
I know. So that's
something right on the belly. You know.
That's the negative side of making this change.
Right.
The USDA hazers, we asked them to come in a little earlier than normal. Is that something we could pursue, have them come in like March 1st instead of...
Well, that's when they do come on.
They do come on March 1st? Okay.
Yeah, we just had to get them there February 22nd because that's when we thought you were going to start. So they're typically there March 1st. And they can concentrate on there. And, with the boats there as well, we did see a reduced number during typically 9 to 3. But after that, it picked right back up.
Yeah, and that's one thing of the study. We did have intertribes help out there, which is, I think was a great assistance, especially to our guys out in the boats. Specifically, we're looking where these fish are popping up and keeping these animals from in the pathway of where these fish are popping up for us to scoop up. So that helped a lot. So make sure you pass it on. Thank you very much.
And speaking about, I talked to our hedger about that, and they said one thing they did notice is that even with the balloon tags, when they pop up, instead of the corner collector, the fish just disperse all over the place. Since we got some trash this way, they saw they were much more concentrated in smaller areas, so actually made their job easy, but it also
makes the seals or sea lions' job easier too.
And so that was the one concern they brought up. They said if the fish act at all, but they should act at all like the balloon tag fish, they're going to be easier to prey upon, so we're going to want to ensure that if we go to this operation, we're going to need to spend a little more attention or spend a little more attention and time detailed haze in that area because they probably will be more susceptible.
The thing is, they come through, if we're talking about kelp, it's such sporadic, you don't have a concentration.
Yeah.
And the sea lions are in that Powerhouse 1 corner because there's...
The entrance is there.
The entrance is there. They're there for winter steelhead.
So they're there. Their opportunity is going to be easier to get at kelp.
Something that comes through downstream is just going to be...
Yeah, it's too sporadic. That's just a fallback event. That's not a
But they're
food and feeding trough.
There are in general, there are going to be more sea lions in that area.
Yeah. And I think that's what our agent would note, too. They're saying, like, sea lions like to tend to spend time there.
Yep.
Egress isn't going to be, they're not going to be dispersed as efficiently as a corner collector, so.
Well, I think what we're going to have is some, I mean, the efficiency and egress or predation rates are going to have to be looked at sometime for this decision to be final, in my mind. If we're going to protect Celts during the March time frame, I don't think we can make a decision today that is a long-term decision on which powerhouse is priority.
Right.
And I think that there's still another piece of it that we need to look at.
Right.
So,
well, and that's one piece that Mike and I were chatting about, and I was going to bring it up at the end of the talk, but now is kind of a good time. Is, you know, for follow-on research, okay, once we've implemented this, what type of research do we want to follow up? One is the efficiency issue. You know, we know with Wertheimer's study, you know, about 70% of the Celts that he radio-tagged that came down from John Day that entered the B2 corner collector area used the corner collector instead of using the units. And so now that we've split the flow or we're splitting it out, you know, do they do the same thing? I mean, do people want to continue with that?
What's the first powerhouse collection efficiency?
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
We don't have enough fish pass through there.
How many fish approach? How many pass via the sluiceway compared to via turbines? It's something that's still unknown. And
something
that's good to get a handle on.
Ed and I talked about yesterday was the possibility of changing the entrance, the chain gate, the gate configuration somewhat for this part of the season. And instead of having shallower gates like we have normally, we may have five of them. We may reduce that to three gates and open them a little bit more.
Isn't that what we had during Wertheimer's study? When he was our team, these fish, it was basically we just had three openings and we had them open more.
Yeah. I don't remember that, but yeah, if that's the case, that's I'm thinking deeper is better than
the wing wall, one the other side of the wing
right,
wall,
right. Exactly what
that's
I was
what
thinking.
We're doing for our Wertheimer's work.
That would shut. That would leave 1A open, shut 1B, leave some 6C, and then possibly either 10 where it is, or you could shut 10 and open 7A, which puts
all it. It all has to do with hydraulics. How much flow we can get through that upper end.
Asselson would be the person to talk to you about that.
But I mean, 10C, 7A, 6C, if you've got those open, you're maxed at the upper end at 3 feet.
I thought Wertheimer had also said that when you have two adjacent gates, you had better kelp passage through the ice and trash sluiceway. The fish seemed to pass better when you had two adjacent gates next to each other. That's why we had the winter operation with the two gates. And it said just two adjacent gates over
7A or something like that.
Adjacent gates over an operating unit.
Oh, okay.
Or over a priority unit.
That's consistent with what we do with the Dells with that nice and trash loose. We've got two open inside.
I'm not as concerned about over an operating unit.
It was over a priority.
These guys are going to find it whether it's running or not. It's a small powerhouse.
I think it's that flow net. You know, they're just where they can feel that flow net.
Yeah, but they're searching. They're moving around. They're not just going with the flow and having to make that final decision. They're moving around out there. I think they'll find these.
So we can come up with some. There'll be more detail.
I just want to make sure they buy it. If there's only a foot of water going over because the forebay dropped and the guys didn't get out there to adjust the gates.
We'll solve that issue.
They need to be an auto. But if we can get a deeper openings,
we can only go so deep. Without flooding it out.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah. I know, but you can shut some. You can deepen others.
Sure, you could go to
two. We took the wall out, so we don't have the constriction at the upper end anymore. So, we have that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be up to Askelson to take a look at that.
Yeah.
But what can we do, I guess, is the question.
But what I'm saying, it sounds like there's some follow-on kelp work after we initiate this initial operation that you want to come up with something.
That's the, yes,
some
absolutely.
Analysis.
To understand what that is, between now and then, the question is, do we modify the chain gate operation, the ITS gate operation, to maybe make it a little better for kelp passage, rather than just run it as a juvenile? And right now, they're just set up for juvenile passage, basically.
Yeah.
So that's on the table as a possibility.
You're thinking more analysis.
What I was going to suggest is either call Wertheimer or Allen, since they did RT work and they actually had fish that got stretched this way. Take a look what the chain gate operation was during that study.
Yeah.
It was like 01. Not the best year to happen, but it was 01.
No.
And they did have fish using that stretch loose, so I tried to even mimic that changing
operation. If it was 01, I doubt that there was any operation of that powerhouse.
That was priority back then, wasn't it?
Even if it wasn't 01.
My point is that...
Wasn't it B1 priority back then? 2001?
It was.
It could have been back then.
We didn't change until 2002.
Yeah.
So, but my point was that, so they had that as priority unit, and they had Kelsey use Ash and Trash this way. And actually one thing that Alan noted, he says, these fish will sit around and search for a while, and they will try to find the surface route they prefer that.
The intakes were pretty close to the surface at B1, though, too, and that's the other concern I have is that they may not take us. I mean, the efficiency may not be as good because of that. I don't know.
But I think we should sound more concentrate and have better and give them a better hydraulic signature for them.
That's what I was thinking too. I'm just what I don't want to do is to have shallow openings and have them fight it, you know, knock up, because it's just too shallow.
You guys are seeing more research. Are you thinking a literature review of all the stuff that's already out there from Wertheimer and from the Dalles, or are you thinking a brand new study?
New study. We've already got the data from...
That's what I'm saying, but
we've already reviewed all that.
A lot of hints out there that you may not need to spend all the money and effort, I guess, to redo these studies if you've got enough clues to kind of guide you in that.
Well, I think the efficiency, I might be able to... be convinced of that. It's the egress.
That's the issue. I mean, the clues here are such that I'd say we shouldn't do it.
For egress? Yeah. I mean, for efficiency?
No, for egress.
Okay, but efficiency is...
We don't know. You know, I think you might be able to improve it, but we don't know if it's bad to start with. I mean, that's what I don't know. And you don't know. Nobody knows. We didn't have enough fish go through there to say, and Wertheimer's work. I mean, I reviewed all
well,
that.
Well, we could explore, you know... Right now, 10C, 7A, and 6C are open, plus 1A.
7's not open. No.
Is 7C open? Did they close
3,
that?
3B? Yeah. 3B, 6C, and 10A, and then
okay, nothing 1A on 7A on the other side of the wall?
Nothing on the other side. Well, the 10 is, but not right on the other side. No, that's not one of the automated gates. But we could run it. It's just you'd have to drop, you know, fix the gate.
Okay.
And you'd have to shut 10 off. You know, that's just a question that's on the table, and I don't know. I don't have a problem running it the way it is now. But
yeah.
We should at least look at Wertheimer and Evans's work, and if there's a better operation for Kelts, run that through March through April 10, and then switch to the normal juvenile operation thereafter.
Well, especially if the time after it starts filled. After it starts filled.
Yeah. Go back to the original operation for juvenile passage. But so that's basically a special kelp pattern for the gates. I think that's worth looking into.
Okay.
And if we have data that would support something specific, then good. If not, then we could probably come up with something that our imaginations tells us is better.
Strike that word. Professional judgment.
I was just being honest.
Sam, you already typed it.
Has anyone had a look at kelt numbers at B2?
The kelt numbers are three.
Three.
Well, there's
two unknowns.
Yeah,
and
some unknowns.
Three steelhead, right?
No. Two steelhead, one unknown.
Okay, so three total.
Three
right?
total.
Okay,
three total.
And that was as of yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm. This morning. Yeah. At least it had
the eighth through the eighth. It was three fish total.
Okay.
Passed. Probably all steelhead.
Okay.
Because there were judged to be some on it, all of them. And I can't imagine that we have full action hook already.
No. Yeah.
So.
Let's, I don't want to digress onto the other matrix item until we get past the priority one first.
Yeah.
So I kind of want, right. So Fish and Wildlife Service again, you're okay with the March 1st through April 10th priority powerhouse and then us looking at special kelt sluiceway gate pattern if needed?
As long as Gary's caveats are followed.
Okay. Nymphs?
Yeah. For this year, like I said, we've got...
We're just talking this year, right?
We're just
year.
Talking this year and yeah. We've got some issues, so...
Yeah. BPA?
Yeah, we're okay with it.
Really?
That's my idea.
I didn't figure. Why even ask him?
Oregon? Oh, sorry, they're not here.
This is crazy.
They're not here yet.
They're on the phone.
Who's on the phone? Oregon's on the phone?
No. Washington. Stephen Richardson.
Oh, Steve's on the phone?
On the phone, yeah.
Steve, you there?
Blue, Steve.
Where's the mute button,
Deb? I better be there. I have some adult count issues I'm going to throw at him.
Okay, Washington not there.
Damn.
In absentia and tribes.
And the question we had was boat hazing. Is that, when does that normally start? What's the, I can't remember the schedule. Is it?
It varies. It has been starting usually March.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know about the tribes, but the states, they're thinking about backing off on the, they're no longer required to do boat hazing.
Do they get into that close anyway with boats?
No. I mean, they can't really get up to the ice and try to shoot. They've got something. I don't remember what those.
It's a 50-foot buffer.
Ineffective for that.
Well, they seem to be doing an okay job during the boom tank.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that had to do with the blooms or they have popping the fish up farther than where they would normally enter and dive. I mean, they were doing good because the fish were popping up in a consistent place.
Well, they were talking about dangerous water in there, and I assume that that meant that they couldn't go into that area.
Yes.
To get some of that water.
Well, yeah, our regulation was 250 feet from off of the, was it 250 feet from where the sluiceway dumps in? They couldn't get any closer.
See, that's not going to really be.
So, what's affecting those guys standing up on the 55 deck with slugs?
Yeah, that would be real
effective. and the composition of the slug.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, it's greater difference. But so anyway,
there with
so, I still think it's.
I think you're okay. I'd say is we need to be monitoring it. If we start seeing sea lion activity much different than we've seen years past, I'm going to look at especially for some additional hazing there or something like that to
okay.
Give us the best.
I don't think, you know, what we're not going to see. Yes, Tom, I agree. But what we're going to see is the same activity, you know, because you've got the entrance. These guys are coming in chasing Chinook to the entrance. There aren't many Chinook out there now.
I'm seeing Chinook, so I'm worried that if we see a bunch of, if we do happen to have a good kelp return, which we had a decent
it could show up.
And we see, you know, we see like abnormally high.
Because we don't have many Chinook out there, that the sea lion starts showing up early. What do we have out there? No, it was just one California last I saw, but that's been.
Well, we've had four different ones show up, but there's none today.
So still pretty,
really
pretty slow.
Incredible.
That's good.
And that's what I'm saying. As long as we keep like this kind of stuff, I'm fine with it. But if we suddenly see like eight Calis show up and be hanging around and the Chinook count's still
and
low,
there's no Chinook,
then
yeah.
I'm
that
be
could
saying,
be a problem.
Well, we might want to kick up our
heads. That will be an issue.
So I'm fine with, you know, spring season kind of talk about kelp stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we saw that, we'd say we probably ought to go back to the second powerhouse.
Well,
if we see,
just
if we see sea lions start focusing on that area, and we don't have many Chinook passing, but they're moving up the river. The sea lions are moving up the river, and they're focusing on that corner of the powerhouse, first powerhouse at the ITS. We would want to go back to the corner pleasure.
Talk about it, sure. I think it's, it makes sense. It's
well,
we're not going to feed sea lions with steelhead kelp. That is not going to happen.
No,
so
I understand, but I guess back
be
to Bob's point earlier that these things are coming through so sporadically. They're throughout the day. There's no diurnal focusing of kelp.
I know, but I'm saying that if we do see a focused of sea lions in that corner, and we don't have many Chinook passing, we can assume that they're probably feeding on kelts, especially if we had a lot of them passing.
Well,
we've met our triggers.
Steelhead from Chinook.
You guys can see
we
it.
We had a few that somebody said, man, I'm pretty sure it was a kelt because it was really
skinny.
Yeah. Actually, I watched them just pass up Bungsy ones.
It's like,
yeah.
Right to the surface, and they just...
Well, I would think they would pick a spring Chinook over a kelp any day, and they probably know the difference. But if there are no spring Chinook available, starving's not an option.
Yeah,
so
if we see something extraordinary, we'll let them
I think that's the key, is if we see something that's unusual, then we would raise the issue.
And something you couldn't handle with hazing efforts, or you know, you still, these animals just are just concentrated here for a reason.
Yeah. Based on photos of those sea lions, I don't think starving is an option. I agree.
Ever.
Low component, I mean, being that, like right now, it doesn't matter what priority powerhouse it is because everything's running.
That's coming up.
Right.
That's
coming up.
I mean,
I'll get there. Let's get past the priority thing for this year first, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So we've had a vote. So the priority change from Powerhouse is accepted it's a technical recommendation from the group. So
with a pile of caveats.
Yeah. That's March 1.
That's March 1 to April 10th.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you could actually start Powerhouse 1 priority earlier if you wanted.
I think we wanted to keep it consistent with the start of the fish passage season. So
you may not be able to start it earlier anyway, depending upon which ladder is out.
All I'm saying is that you now have some flexibility. Yeah. If you want to start earlier, you could.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
We're talking about this year's.
Yeah. This year.
Well, it's a little late for this year to me. Yeah. It's like, what's it, Marshall?
So, we're not talking about it.
Okay.
Go back and fish.
Second item is the issue about the kelp trigger. But you wanted to talk about the flow issue?
Yeah, that's let's talk about that. There's two other issues. Yeah, one is we switched priority, but if we run second powerhouse, we still need protection for kelp at second powerhouse. So we need some trigger that says that when second powerhouse gets to a certain percentage or amount of flow or number of units, then we open the corner collector. Second part of that is, what's the trigger for doing that? That trigger shouldn't be based on the old trigger. I mean, I don't mind the old trigger. That's fine if we were only running second powerhouse. But now that we have fish going through first powerhouse, you're not going to get the same level of number of fish through the JBS system that we would have before.
So you're providing better protection through Powerhouse 1.
Well, you're probably passing the chunk.
We're providing some protection over there, but you're not providing protection at Powerhouse 2. But so when do you start doing that?
For the population, though, you are providing a lot more protection with this operation.
Now we're accounting for the
Powerhouse 1. Well, I'm not sure of that.
Only during a low-flow year and a normal-flow year, if you're running both powerhouses fully loaded, you're not providing any additional protection because the ice and trash sluice way would have been open all of March anyway. All we've done is said we're happy with the condition of the
route.
I think it actually
you
is
are
reduced protection.
Yeah. So in a higher-flow year, you're providing some protection because you're able to pass those fish via Powerhouse 1.
But you could anyway.
That's always been going on.
Right. So
it's not. It's just a now. It's the priority is the issue. We wouldn't run Powerhouse 1 so much in the past. Now we do because we have this year because we have a lot of flow. But I think the point is that we don't know the efficiency side to side of those powerhouses. We don't know where these fish are.
Right.
We assume that it's equally distributed across the four bay, but we don't know that. We run the second powerhouse, you have no protection for those fish. And I don't know that they'll go all the way around two islands to get to Powerhouse 1 to get out of there. So I think that we need a trigger for when we start the corner collector at Powerhouse 2, based on Powerhouse 2 operations, and a flow trigger and a fish trigger also goes along with that. But that fish trigger, I don't feel, should be 20 fish for two, and then the 2 consecutive day issue. I think it needs to be prorated. We can prorate it by flow, or you can pick an arbitrary number or something similar to that. But
are you saying it's an arbitrary number?
It was already arbitrary. That's true. So we can just keep it up.
Another one.
And right now we have 200 to 250 KCFS in the river. We're running both powerhouses pretty close to full.
Yep.
So you can make a rough assumption of about 50-50 split. Mm-hmm. So probably for this year, since this is a one-year operation, we could say that the trigger would be, it's obviously you've met any kind of trigger for flow. I was going to suggest 2 units. Once you get above 2 units, which is about, if you're building up from just one powerhouse to about 2 units.
So a 2-year operation would be the trigger to say start.
That's when you get 20% of the river passing through that side of that side of the river.
Okay.
So if you get the 20%, I'd say you want to have some protection over there because we don't know what that means in terms of efficiency.
So once your third unit kicks on, then the trigger kicks in.
Third unit kicks on. I don't think it was your single line.
Rarely do
we
just bring 1 unit on.
23% for 2 units, right? So once you get over that, I guess is.
So are you saying
once we get
once
over
you have 2 units or 3 units?
I was going to say 2 units. But once you get two units on, then once you get up to 20% of your flow going through that powerhouse, you should have protection.
And, I mean, just to kind of get the stem in there, because if it's like one of those kind of like pop on, like, yeah, I'm on for.
Oh, I don't know. That gives you a headache.
That's going to be, I know. That's
that just gives you a headache.
I mean, because you know someone's going to be walking back and asking this assessment question.
You can go down the road forever on that, you know.
I think we can bring that up next year because we'll have the hoist, but for this year, I think this year
you're fine on the flow.
You just trigger, well, yeah, the flows are, like, you could talk about an increasing hydrograph, if it's, you know, projected for, yeah, exactly.
So a two-unit operation minimum, the trigger starts.
At least two units. You trigger the start of the corner collector, at least the start of the...
You start counting.
The first trigger. Okay, we're going to have two triggers here. One's going to be on flow, the other's going to be based on fish. Actually, there's three triggers. Because of our wonderful 20 fish thing, yeah, we're going to have that. Plus, there's a consistency of passage trigger that was the two fish for 2 days.
Yeah.
Getting pretty trigger happy over there.
Well, you know, I didn't really want to go this way. I would rather just open it. March 1, be done with it. But the other thing is you got more and more flow, so it's going to be less pain for you guys as well.
So it's especially trigger for you.
So why don't we just keep it simple? I mean, like Tammy said, nothing's changed. We've got a full river. We've got full powerhouses. Nothing's changed. Why don't we just keep the trigger we had last year? Wait and work on this when we get the gate next year.
So you want to do powerhouse 2 as a priority then?
Either way, it's not going to matter right now.
I don't think you're full. Are you full right now, both powerhouses?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, the problem is that the trigger is diluted by half of the fish, assuming half the fish
anyway.
Go through powerhouse 1.
It
no,
would have been anyway.
No.
This year it would have been anyway.
This year.
This right. year.
And that's why I'm talking. Just keep it
simple.
You
just say keep it for this year, and then we'll come back and... Jason doesn't want to get any more
well, that's
once you problem. Get the hoist running, you'll have more flexibility.
Yep.
The trigger was okay last year. Nothing's changed this year. I mean,
the trigger was assuming powerhouse 2 was the primary route.
Yeah, but I think our concern was too that you wanted to make sure that if fish were going to B1, were they surviving at just a higher rate as B2?
Yeah.
So
that's true, but that was all based on this priority change and assumption that as in most years,
so
we only have
flow.
Enough flow for one powerhouse.
Right. So you have evidence that the fish that are being split off are surviving at just the highest rate, or we're providing just the safest passage.
That's all great, but what's going on now is we have that going on the first powerhouse. Second powerhouse is running full bore, no corner collector.
But your trigger was supposed to tell you if you're getting fish that are stacking up there.
Right. Our trigger was the discussions that the triggers were engaged under were for all the fish going through the second powerhouse.
So this would be the same thing.
No, it's not. We have a different year this year, so I would reopen that trigger discussion. We have a year now where half the fish are going on the other side. Your trigger, I'd say your trigger is half.
I mean, I'd say keep it the same. Keep the same level of protection we had last year.
It's not the same.
So, Gary, is your concern two fish, two consecutive days, or is it the 20 cumulative fish?
Well, what I'm concerned about is that we're diluted.
Right. But I think the FPP, as we had written it, and with the policy chiming in, it was going to read the same triggers as last year, two fish per day, 2 days in a row, and then... the 20 cumulative fish that we need to discuss later. So that was going to carry forward regardless of the water year, whether it was going to be fully loaded powerhouses or not.
Gary's concerned.
And if that's the issue, then that's a
He's
little bit different.
He's concerned a larger proportion of fish will have already passed Bonneville Dam by the time the trigger is set.
Way,
because we're running that other route of passage, there's going to be more fish going through the turbines
yeah,
before
see,
the trigger
gets
set. Yeah,
see, that's a nice... Okay, so then we... And going into the FP in the FOP, we screwed up and didn't talk about that issue.
Correct.
Because that, to me, that changes the color of the issue from what we discussed in other years. Maybe not for you guys, but certainly from a fish protection standpoint, it does. And now all of a sudden, that number, if you assume equal passage, it's really 40 fish.
40 fish and four.
And four
fish.
Right. everything gets doubled.
Doubles everything. It's like you're sampling now.
You've got
split sample size.
It's just an efficiency issue. If you're assuming equal efficiency, and you've got both powerhouses running, taking half the flow, then that 20 fish trigger suddenly became a 40 fish trigger from the population mm-hmm. standpoint. That's just plain math.
Yep.
That's what we were assuming. When we were all those discussions that we had 2 years ago, we were looking at one powerhouse run. So that was the color of the argument. That was the color of the thoughts at the time. It wasn't like, oh, we have both powerhouses, so 20 fish is...
For us, it was a trigger of when there's enough fish present to,
I understand,
to
yeah.
make a benefit.
That's true.
For this. So that
but it wasn't 40, it was 20.
Right, and that hasn't changed.
It has
it's
changed.
Still
your dilution.
Well,
diluted
it
by half.
I think by the, at the time when we were all talking, we only thought we were only running one powerhouse. I don't
right.
think really jiggled in our brains that, oh, we could have both powerhouses.
That's just simple math, Jason. I mean,
well, look, I'm willing to look
we can argue the argument.
I'm willing to look at it, but this is new enough. I haven't had a chance to look at it thoroughly enough, so I'm not going to make any commitments today. I'm willing to look at it, but until then, I'm comfortable leaving the trigger the way it was.
Well, we're not saying, we are saying under two powerhouse operation that the trigger is insufficient. That's what I'm saying.
Cut it in half.
The trigger is what?
It's yeah. insufficient.
Insufficient.
The 20th.
We have a different condition this year.
Right.
We
well,
have a different
unless you can
condition.
Measure the fish in one, right. and that goes to the trigger.
That would be fine.
That was based, the original yeah. trigger and the original.
It was based on all the fish in the river.
Based on a, basically 100% sample of the whole river flow. Now you divided it, 75% of the flow is going over the powerhouse one, but you still have, you got to be able to measure those number of
yeah.
fish.
Then 20 is fine.
Then you've got to be able to.
It's just a sampling effort, a sampling efficiency issue. So, if that's, we didn't talk about that. And the original discussions on this trigger issue.
Well, the upside of this is you've got the Powerhouse 1 operation now that's running. You've got a sluiceway that's running that's got as high survival as the corn collector. So, in effect, you already are providing more protection that way.
Well, we don't know the efficiency.
You're not providing more protection.
You can assume it's 80, 90,
well, then
70, whatever that.
If,
whatever
it's, if it's equal protection, then it should be, the trigger should.
And like I said, I'm willing to look at it. So
well,
it's just,
where we at? I mean, that's the same argument. It could be.
Well,
under this river,
right
we've
now
got
the
that under so there's nothing more. Nothing.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah, so right now, if we didn't have Powerhouse 1 open and this ice and trash sluice way, we wouldn't have the corner collector open based on the trigger.
Right.
That's right.
We only have three fish?
Yep.
So, we're kind of a trade.
We're not going to open it no matter what at this point because we don't have enough fish. But
right, so.
If we choose a 10 fish trigger instead of 20, we're still well short of that.
Right.
And I would still want to see a consistency. I mean, well, you guys would want to see a consistency of passage trigger of some sort, which is what I was going down the road of originally.
Right.
To see is that, and I don't know if, prorating two fish down to one fish, there's not much room to work with there. One thing that we thought about doing was one fish for 3 days instead of two. As a way of getting at that. So just some thoughts.
I'll think about it.
So the default though right now until we get some resolution is two fish, two days,
20
fish total, and then the corn cup will be open unless we get some resolution.
Correct.
And on top of that we'll talk about are we going to move chain gates?
Correct.
Powerhouse one?
Correct.
Okay.
We're going to look at the
capacity and looking at past.
Let's look at the past data on that before we dive into
right,
that
and then
decision.
I'm
probably
going to ask the project to move the gates until I look at the data.
Just saying, you're going to move forward with that and we want this language.
Okay. So given that we're in March, we don't have a lot of time. We want an answer on the trigger issue. I'm sure it's going to go to Rock and Richie.
Yeah, I guess I would say, too, on that note, the summary statement, I guess it would be more accurate to say that summarized last year's operation, but I guess I'm uncertain whether it's okay to even say that's the default operation for this year based on the information that I've heard at policy levels. I think it's a fair statement to say the two fish for two consecutive days for cumulative total of 20 fish is an accurate statement. I think it's accurate to say that's what was done in 2010. I don't, based on the information I've heard as of this morning, I don't know if it's even accurate to say that we could assume that we would actually do that this year. based on the fact that there's all this new forthcoming information.
Is it in the fish passage plan right now?
The two fish for two consecutive days. The cumulative of 20 is not in the fish passage plan. All I'm trying to articulate is that there's a lot of moving parts right now, and
well, it's March, so let's get those moving parts.
Well, I know, and they're still moving. I guess I don't want people to. I guess I would be concerned if folks were walking out of here today under the assumption that the Corps is going to do what we did last year based on moving conversations that I've heard changing quite rapidly. So, and I know Dennis and I talked about this yesterday, and then I heard some more conversations today about just there's a lot of new information. We're all talking about it right now. We're hearing prorating. We're hearing, you know, do last year's ops. And all I'm trying to say is that I think it would be premature to assume that we're just going to do what we did last year.
Well, I'm saying use that as the default, but I'm hoping we're going to make some changes. Because we've got to at least have something on the table.
Yeah, I mean, what's on the table then? That the Corps is suggesting there's nothing?
I would think...
nothing at the second powerhouse regardless?
No, I think it's reasonable to acknowledge what was done last year, but I just...
That's what I've heard from through the grapevine,
right.
Through my boss, Rock, was that the 20 fish and the two triggers are still in effect. That's the base.
Okay. Then you know more than I do, and so thank you for that clarification.
That's well, I didn't hear it this morning.
Okay.
I heard it yesterday, so I don't know what you're hearing this morning. But
and you're right. I think there was some language, though, in that initial description of that trigger last year, that it was a one-year trigger. So I'm not saying that it's automatically rolling over, but what I'm saying is it's a good place to start at the base. So.
That's what we did
that's
last
what
year.
But Rock was real concerned that we started with that as a base. And I said, yeah, that's fine. We'll work with that. Well, that's our working assumption for this year. If we didn't make a decision here today on the first powerhouse, we said, no, we don't want to do that, where would we be?
And I think our position's always been that it's been a year-to-year discussion. We've never been extremely comfortable with the whole trigger thing either. So
now then we'd be stepping into a long debate in the middle of March.
Right.
God, it's ridiculous.
We should have solved by April
10th. What's that?
We should have solved by April 10th.
Well, we can. Yeah, if we can argue long enough, then there's no issue.
Well, I'll make this. The faster this meeting goes, the faster I can get back and start working on this.
Okay,
stuff,
you're done out of here. Gone.
So we're gonna leave it with that. We're gonna keep the trigger that we had last year for right now.
Well, I think that has to be confirmed. I think
it sounds like
Rock and those guys are comfortable with rolling. Their starting place, I thought, was the 20 fish. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think what I heard from.
And we're going to leave this
from
without
Rock.
Trigger. So
there's two issues here. Two key issues is what do we do when the second powerhouse operates? That regardless of what goes on in the first powerhouse, when you're running Celts over there, you need protection over there, period. So at what point do we say that powerhouse is running at a high enough rate that we need to start that protection? That's the first argument. Second argument is then when are enough fish available that we would start that protection? So one is protection, the other is when you start it. And that's going to be based on some trigger. And what we're saying is you need to prorate that based on the efficiency of your sampling device over there on the bypass. So that's a discussion point.
Yeah, I can agree with the first point. I think I'm fine with the two units on. You're getting above your two units. Your third unit comes on, your trigger starts. That makes sense to me. So that's one.
Okay, that's two different things.
Yeah,
He said two units on. You said once you get to two units or bring on a third, then your trigger starts.
Yeah,
and then
those are things we can argue about. But
right.
I mean, the point is that what I want to make sure is that the action agencies agree to provide the protection at some point at the second powerhouse.
Yep.
Yeah, since they're already on, it doesn't matter this year anyway. So.
It doesn't matter this year. It really doesn't. You know, we'll be talking about this again next year, but I think we're going to have all the powerhouses. It's going to be a 50-50 thing. Really what I'm saying is that you need to have the corner collector on. We need to have a trigger, and that trigger needs to be what?
Right. Well, the current fish passage plan doesn't have the cumulative.
So it's just two fish for 2 days. Cool.
No, but that's on the F-pump. Yes, it does have the two fish for 2 days.
Huh? We just
but it
trigger.
Does not have the 20 cumulative. Oh,
well,
it's in there.
It's in
there.
But the 20 fish cumulative is on the agenda as a potential change form so that we can bring the FPP
in
compliance
with
policy.
Now, what's in the fish passage plan?
Correct.
It's two fish for 2 days.
Consecutive days.
But there was a policy call last year to go 2 fish, 2 days, 20 fish.
Right. We're going to throw that out. So now it's 2 fish, 2 days.
Good. We're just following the plan.
Sounds good.
So follow the plan. That's what the FOB says, right?
Follow your policy guidance. That's, I'll follow your guys.
You follow our lead?
From last year.
No, no, no.
Thanks. So we haven't really made any progress
been
here.
Smart.
No.
I think, well, we made progress on...
We can still pass priority.
No, you get pass one.
There's still debate. There's debate on the trigger, and when it happens, it powers two. Yeah. EPA is going to go back. We kind of have an idea of where NOAA is.
Yeah, let's get something.
Where are you at?
Well, I lean more towards fish protection.
Okay.
So I'm with NOAA.
Okay.
The 20 fish has always been arbitrary for us, so we think it's silly. So we think 2 fish for 2 days is adequate, but we'll gladly talk to something else.
Okay.
If you've got 20% of the flow going over P2 while you've got Powerhouse 1 fully loaded, and you're getting 2 fish per day,
we don't have 20% of the flow.
I know, Dave. Yeah. That's where the argument starts to fall apart. Right. Yeah. I think what's going to save us for this year is that we're probably going to have half the flow, so we don't have to go down that road of units on off,
right,
or whether it's 2 fish drop based on a pro rating of 10% of flow or something like that. So I don't want to go down that road right now. But you know, we could say that we got half the powerhouse or the full powerhouse running. Half the fish are over there. It makes sense to prorate if the 20 fish trigger was based on the abundance in the river. If it was based only on abundance in the second powerhouse, which doesn't make any sense to me, then we got another argument.
What if it was arbitrarily based?
It was. It was totally arbitrarily based. Not the 2 fish for 2 days. That was not arbitrary.
It wasn't as arbitrary as 2 fish in 20.
It was not. Where's the data?
Where's the data for 2 fish for 2 days?
You wrote a memo.
I gave it to you.
I know. I'm saying.
Why is this a memo on 20 fish? 20 fish is like someone came out of someone's backside.
Where is that?
Every one of these is arbitrary. That's the issue here.
What I wrote up was not arbitrary.
Right.
It was not arbitrary.
At least that's some data review.
It had a basis.
This need to go to SRW.
Look at it again. It had a basis.
So where did 20 fish come from? Does that mean they can count on their hands and toes?
Probably.
For some people.
Thank God it was just one of the 6 2.
If it was arbitrary, it would have been pulled out of thin air. I had data to support it. I had several years of data. Read the memo.
That was a memo last year.
Supply. I think it's 2 years ago now.
Is it 2 years ago?
Yes, yeah, it's 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah. Okay. So.
Should be in the notes somewhere on the website.
It is.
Exactly.
I think I wrote
posted.
It's also recorded. You really want to get deep.
No.
All right. So, from a practical standpoint, when it comes to coordination and communication, you're going to go back to Dr. Hawley. We'll go back as the core. Bring this discussion back for folks and about what people's, I guess, what your thoughts are on trigger, unit operations, so the 2-trigger protection, and when the trigger starts.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep it simple. It's just prorated based on the flow.
Okay.
All right, are we done?
If you guys would just do it, this wouldn't happen, okay? It's 5 KCFS.
This is the Kelp Research U of I. Tick assisting.
I guess I didn't even know that was on the
present deadline.
I think what this is getting at. I'll talk about that later. I think what this is referring to is that at the Dworshak fish hatchery, there was a CRITFIC study for kelp, and they were using U of I before. Now yes. Apparently the Nez Perce tribe is being used instead of U of I, is my understanding.
Sort of, yeah.
And I guess what it does for me is it kind of highlights a need. And now is not the time for it, but just kind of a heads up. I think there should be a discussion at some point in time, probably through SRWG rather than FPALM, but a status update on where we're at with kelp and where
Actually, the man you talked to is right across the table. He's running the kelp management plant right there.
So he's our kelp guy.
If you guys would quit bugging me in this meeting, I'd
I'm not sure about what that's going to say after this discussion.
I'm going to say we've got 5.1% left.
You know what? What I want is to know is exactly what that 20 fish percentage of the population is and why you chose that.
I'll talk to your boss.
Take that arbitrary.
We'll see when.
3.4. Yeah.
All right. You two. I can say it to you. I can't say it to him. So you left.
When do you two have to go use the bathroom?
Which one are you going to wet yourself?
Lamprey task group update. Did John give us anything?
I thought you said Derek was
going to
be here.
Has Derek got anything? Derek or Sean
for
Lamprey?
He's not here.
Stop looking at my hat and focus on the agenda.
All right, so we don't have one together. Doug, do you have anything for RCC?
Thanks, everybody, for the work on the fish passage plan. They're all available today, so.
Has left the conference.
So make sure you get your copies before you go. Does anybody have any questions on the fish passage plan? So it's done.
And it's outdated already?
And it's outdated already.
What's it say about Bonneville Kelp?
can I get a change for a moment? So Tim, I have some agenda sometime.
Yeah. Who are you asking?
What? You got to ask the
coacher.
I'm just the note keeper.
Blackberry. Well, you know, I was actually replying to your wife, telling her that I was going to be late with the budget.
She knows that.
Ooh.
Yeah, she's at home right now with a sick kid, so if you really want to get on her good side, yeah, send some nasty emails right now. Or either that or I'll come and cough on you.
We've got some items to add. You can add them at the end.
Do you want me to do the flow, the STP?
Okay, so
STP 10-day. Forecast starting with Lower Granite day 1, 61. Mid on day 5, it'll be 65K. And then on day 10, forecast to be 66K. Moving on to Priest Rapids, day 1 today, forecast of 141K. Day 5 of the forecast, dropping down to 128K. And then day 10 of the forecast, 123K. And then moving down to Bonneville, day 1 of the forecast today, 217K. Bumping up slightly by day 5 to 221K. And then on day 10 of the forecast, 228.
At Bonneville.
At Bonneville.
228. And what's
that's
2 weeks.
That's
2 weeks out?
Yeah, so that would be...
so we're looking at enough to run both powerhouses.
That'd be on the 19th.
Oh, yeah. We're anything under about 202... You start dropping off powerhouse 2 units.
About 100 per powerhouse, thereabouts.
That's about 100.
With 11 off.
It's about 90K at powerhouse 1 and 112.
112 at 2. With the 11 off.
Yep.
So, yeah, so we're in pretty good shape for the rest. Yeah. So that makes it a easier conversation, I think.
That's all I have.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Should have done that before we had the
Yeah.
Jason, I've got a VPA update. If you have anything, line outages and
we have
foul release coding. Scott usually.
Yeah, I don't have anything on foul release coding, but I've got two minor outages. There's one in March 21 and 22 in the lower snake where we've got a voltage limitation that shouldn't, with those flow forecasts you just gave, that shouldn't force or affect anything. Yeah. Same thing for March 26 and 27. So it's 2 days. Over 2 weeks, we've got total voltage out of the snake limitations, so we'll have units down, but shouldn't cause any. Nothing that's going on right now, so very minor stuff.
Of course, a little spilling.
Do you have any questions? Call Scott.
Right here, he's having fun somewhere. Arizona.
Yeah, perfectly calm right now. It's his baseball game.
He'll be back.
Coordination forms to be approved. First one is the Dalles roof replacement. Third week of July through the third week of September. And we should be done with our performance testing by the third week of July.
Yep.
So, Bob, what I hear is that you couldn't make any changes or any gains in this at all. stuck with what the original request was.
We weren't able to swing it any other way. I mean, that's, we needed that, that block of time is needed for that, that roof replacement.
Bad timing. None of this gets easier. The issue comes down to efficiency, entrance efficiency for the east entrance, with unit 16 being the, I mean, that unit's as far away from the entrance, main entrance, as the entire powerhouse at Snake River. I mean, it's
we did look back on unit operations in the past years.
18.
And that time of year, during that time period, usually it's unit 18 is the only unit we have on that entire east half of the powerhouse room.
Right. No, I know
so
that.
So we're basically bumping it to 16.
Right. It's two more units away.
It is.
Yeah. It's about 100 feet or so. And I mean, my point is that that's as far, you know, so the distance there. We wouldn't run unit 6 in the Snake River to get attraction to an entrance by unit 1. I mean, we'd say that's kind of crazy. Well, that's kind of what we're at here. We got 16. And our entrance is on the other side of unit 22. So I don't know if there's going to be effect of this or not. It's just a bad timing because it's right during the height of the run. You know, I mean, the first 2 weeks of September, we all know that's the peak passage. And we don't have spill, so we don't have attraction to the north ladder. So we're kind of relying on peak passage at the Dalles. We're relying on the orifices are closed, so we don't have those. So now we have one entrance. It's the west powerhouse entrance that is all that we have good attraction for.
We're hoping to run that test where we actually set some flow down in the south and try to move it to the east. We hope to do that in February, but
He couldn't do it?
We could never get to it. No, that was...
Can you still try it?
Things going. We can try it now. I mean, we're
you got all
in the season, but...
Got a lot of units running now, but it doesn't matter.
We can do it now if you want. See what it looks like, or just
exactly
do it,
what
do
was
it
that
when
again?
The time comes and see what we get.
I'd rather do it ahead of time so you know you can do it or not. What exactly was that? What were you going
to
try?
We would have to, in order to reduce some of the flow on the south, we would have to close. There's 8 diffusers on the south. We have to close. I don't want to go any more than probably 2 on that.
South.
And we would hopefully. And then
that'll
close,
push more out of
one of the south entrances, and then try to get more water to the east.
East.
But the
well, it'd be the whole power.
The caveat to that is, I mean, we're normally running pretty low on tailwater at that time. I mean, those weirs are normally running like 13 feet deep anyway, so we don't have a lot of room for dropping that even deeper to get more, put more water out there.
You can.
But we might be able to do something with it.
We can get up to 2 foot of head.
Yeah.
I know that might. What's our criteria?
Get the 2 feet
goes up to 2 feet. We're normally running 1 to 1.5, so
yeah.
You can kick the head up a little bit.
We
still
can
stay
get the
2 feet
ahead without even doing anything in the south. That'd be easy to do.
But we'd want to maximize. I think I just, I mean, you're trying to pull fish. They're going to be coming out through there long ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long, I mean, it's the entire Snake River powerhouse from that last entrance to the, or from the entrance to the first operating. That's a long ways. I mean, just to put it in perspective, think about that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about. Having 18 on, that's, you know, that's a lot closer. It's still not the best situation.
No.
But on the other hand, you got to do what you got to do, I guess. I guess my position on this is that I don't like it. So I can't say that it's something I would recommend. I wish we could have done it at a different time, and I realize the weather issues and all that. When you're tarring a roof, you want to be warm.
Did we talk about trying to open a collection channel entrance?
Collection channel entrance, you're thinking, trying
Those
to get... That was talked about. Somebody brought that up. You bring that up, bring one of the orifices, or you're talking about the orifice, one orifice or two or something
well, not
down
an orifice. We don't have those anymore, but we'd have to do something with the entrance. They're not concrete poured, but they're concrete bulkheads.
Yeah, those are.
Is that what you were thinking? Because collection channel entrance, what do you mean?
Open, I mean, everything's closed on the collection channel right now. Just get something open closer to you.
Right. So you would open up one of those floating, or one of those orifices, or two, and get flow out of there as an additional attraction to that.
Well, but it wouldn't be floating orifices. Those are long, I think those are long.
It'd have to be just an open.
You'd have to figure something out.
But this is to go into the collection channel, so it'd be an entrance.
Yeah.
It's not AWS, it's an entry, it's actual.
A lot of flow going on.
Yeah, it would.
You might lose velocity and flow somewhere else.
Yeah.
The main entrance.
You might really mess up hydraulics.
Yeah.
Did we all disable all the AWS valves?
What's that?
No,
they're all still there.
He's talking about
doing that. We haven't done it yet. Yeah.
So we're pretty limited here. So do you want to do the test or not before and look at it? Or
I think you do that, and also
do you want to do it in season?
I think you want to do the test first. I'll see if that's even feasible. And then if you guys take it to your hydraulic guys and say, hey, if we open a collection channel orifice, run through Hellcraft and see what you might have, what things, if you'd screw up stuff, or if the things might be feasible.
Yeah, we're talking a very small amount of flow, though, through those. I mean, you know, you're only going to get, what?
Oh, through an orifice, floating orifice or something?
Something like that.
Well,
yeah.
It won't be floating.
Well, it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be that. It would have to be some other setup, too. I don't know if we wouldn't have any way of regulating it.
I don't know what, I'm trying to figure out what, it's just kind of be a wide open.
It would
have to be wide open.
Because there's nothing moving with tailwater or none of the.
I think some of those are steel. I need to look at them. There might be a couple of them that are actually steel bulkheads, but I don't know if they have any way of adjusting them.
I think it's probably better if we could just put more out of the main entrances.
Well, I think that's where you start. And if you do that, great. If you can't. Thing.
Well, you can. You could. I don't see a problem with that.
You only get two.
But once you've maxed that out by closing the south entrance, I don't see where you have more water to go through anything else. You're going to change. You're going to close the south entrance. You're going to try to put some of that flow out of the east.
Close some of the south. Yeah. I don't want to close too many diffusers. That makes me nervous.
Okay.
But of the eight diffusers down on the south, I think we'd be pretty safe closing two.
On the south, you're talking about the south channel?
The south entrance.
All the way down to the south entrance, we're getting nothing.
Because the only way you can restrict, that entrance loses a lot of water just because of the size. And the only way you can restrict that flow is diffusers. So we cut out two, maybe three.
Why are you concerned about cutting out more than two?
Well, because we try not to close any, and that just increases your pressure. On the remaining open ones.
Yeah.
Although they're in pretty good shape for being attached, but this kind of makes me nervous.
Okay. So that's conduit pressure, or what pressure?
It's just the... Close it. Normally what we do is we try to open a diffuser somewhere before we close a diffuser somewhere.
It's conduit pressure.
So it keeps it
you don't want the conduit. That's a closed system. You can blow that up. Okay. I wasn't sure which.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're down to, I think this is a big risk. We've got a lot. This is the Columbia River Run. This is the big show this time of the year. And we're losing at 1st of September, we lose the spillway attraction. There we go.
It took us to come back to that. Really?
I
was waiting for that. There's an easy one.
So I was waiting for the opportune time.
Okay.
To throw it out.
Just check it.
We'll run the test. It's okay to do it now. We'll try to do it next week.
Yeah, let's see what that'll get us. I don't know if that gets us much. I mean, what additional flow is that
the other side of those entrances.
I don't know. We'll see.
How will you measure that?
What you think it's going to do in that system for some reason.
You're just going to measure it by depth?
Yeah, we'll just monitor the flow coming out of the east and restrict the south some and see what it's like on the east. Yeah.
So you're going to be looking only at the flow coming out of the east entrance?
Yeah, or we'll watch the west too.
Okay. How many turbines are running at the Dalles right now?
Right now, a lot.
What? All of them?
No.
200 and some odd.
All but one?
21.
Okay. Never mind then. I would have incorporated the test with those six units down.
Yeah, I know. That's the best. Then you can look at the entrance conditions and the TORs.
Yeah.
Although if you had asked that question Monday, it would have been zero. The entire powerhouse tripped offline.
Oh, jeez.
Oops.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's wrong.
Yeah, it's Phil.
Well, no, you want the
And that was a Bonneville, too.
Pretty big.
Tripping the whole powerhouse up
line?
We did powerhouse, too, but not the whole.
Powerhouse, not the whole plant. Powerhouse, one powerhouse, not the other.
Boots.
Yeah.
So do you guys have to use those red tag gates then? Did they pass that, or is that?
No.
Do you have enough?
No, they kept it all inside the wall. One through eight.
Well, you have 9 and 10, you can see.
You might have. Yeah, they might have gone.
Yeah, water. You could have done it.
They might have gone.
You got like 10 or so up the wires.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you had, what, about 200 and some on the river,
you know,
so
that?
You can pass that.
They don't tell us that when power's cut out.
I know, they don't say anything.
All right, let's keep going here.
Nothing to see here.
It's all good.
Somebody get your flashlight.
Quiet down. So we're going to test it next week and see what it.
We'll test it, see if we can get more water out of the east.
Get the info out there.
I can guarantee you we can get a 2 foot differential on the east, no problem.
That's what's gonna happen.
Feel that we've exhausted all rescheduling options?
I think we have. Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully they can just do it a lot faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
we always say it's gonna take this long. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it does.
I'm not going to say I agree with this.
Offer more money.
I hear you.
That's just what it is.
Do our best to get the best attraction with what we got.
Okay.
Bonneville Powerhouse 1 trolley pipe.
Ah.
Trolley pipe.
So we need to move three trolley pipes at Powerhouse 1.
So right. You want, after us, this discussion that we had.
About what?
You want to shut the ice and trash loose way down. In March.
B2 corner collector is going to be open anyway.
28th and 29th. Something hard.
Very big.
Jason might work.
Has left the conference.
Yeah. Left too soon.
So the 28th and 29th, we're planning on hopefully it's to relocate some trolley pipes for the acoustic study.
When do I do this again?
The 28th and 29th, which is Monday and Tuesday. We've got to move these trolley pipes because right now they're impacting the trash rate. So. We've got to do it so we can break those units.
Smooth move.
Yep.
February's a good time of year to do that stuff.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Can you wait until April 10th?
Huh?
Can you wait until April 10th?
No, we don't want to. I mean, we've got the two-unit rolling outage for the powerhouse works out. We have put in a request for that. That's been accepted. On the schedule, and then closing the ice and trash looseway for the day. But there is also a proposal in. I think the project would like to see the corner collector open. If it's not open, they would like to see it opened for if B1 sluiceway goes closed, the B2 corner collector is open.
Can you shut the powerhouse down too while you're at it?
Powerhouse 1?
Yeah. That way there won't be any calls there.
Well, right now, I mean, it's just a daytime. It's daytime dive. It's from 0700 in the morning to 1600 at night, and then we open the sluiceway back up.
1500.
Yes, 1600 in the
afternoon.
You
said
15.
Now you're saying
16.
No, I said
16. 1630.
I said 1630 on the thing,
did it?
Right?
Yeah. Well, I thought it was 15.
Thank you, Bert.
So are you, can you break it up even more?
More.
And break, what do you mean break it up more?
Well, can open up the dives on the...
Hey, quiet down.
Hey, I'm trying to help out. You have a wing wall.
I know. I'm not going to... even if I'm diving on one side of the wing wall, I'm not gonna. The project isn't gonna buy off on having the sluice lip. There's too many risks with sluice to have it over. Somebody falls out of the basket, falls over the wall, they'll just say no.
Just trying to help you.
So from 0700 to 1630, we're proposing how the sluice way flows, okay. And then open it right back up, and then run it the whole evening until the next day. So we're not precluding passage. We're Yeah, and we'll have the B2 corner collector open.
So what I was saying is, can you break that daytime block up into two instead of just having one block?
You guys, we have the B2 corner collector?
Yeah, I got to say, I don't think we're going to... What does opening the corner collector do for you if your sluice is closed? It doesn't help.
No, that doesn't
help. The project made the recommendation to open up the B2 corner collector in place of Powerhouse 1.
But it's not helping the fissure effect.
Have a second powerhouse priority.
You could shift priority,
but I'm guessing by that time you'll still be running exactly what you're doing.
But
now,
if you had the capability of shutting off one powerhouse and running the other, then put a second powerhouse priority and run the corner collector when you do this. But actually, that's not going to work. You'd have to do it for like 2 or 3 days.
Right.
You wouldn't want to set stuff up.
Yeah, middle of the day.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense because you already pulled the fish.
And river forecasts are not showing that.
I was just going to try to pull the STPF to give you a number for the 28th.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So are these the automated gates? So you're going to shut down.
I'm just going to close the night
all
gate.
Of them.
I'm going to close the end gate.
Okay, that's even better yet. So during the mid, let's say halfway through this thing, can they? All I'm trying to do is break it up. I don't know how long those fish will hold up in the Fort Bay. The intent is to protect kelts.
Yeah.
We won't be protecting kelts for the daytime hours, but if we know they'll hold for a while, I don't know how long. If you ran the sluice way during lunch hour.
For an hour?
Whatever you'll give me.
I can give you an hour because, you know...
Kick it back open again. That cuts up that block of time down to half.
We could kick it open for an hour while we're moving cranes and reassembling.
Any fish that are hanging right in the forebay will...
Because it's easy. I mean, we can open and close the sluice way by that end gate fairly easy. So an hour gives us... enough time to remobilize cranes and things like that and move to the other end. So
if we could do that, I think then that's okay.
I would say do that anytime you don't have divers in the water. So like you said, they're always constantly repositioning, right?
Well, by the time you put a clearance on the corner,
you got to remove
the clearance. So the hour midday is good.
At least cut it in half.
And
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
You're next, buddy.
Yep. So. And that'll be for both days. And I think we'll be done early the second day because we've got three pipes. We're planning on 2 days, but I don't think it's going to take that long.
Good.
I planned it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Just okay. That'll cut down those
and
outages
no B2 corner collector operation.
Unless your trigger's already, we're not even talking about that.
You're just going to do that. 1 hour open and then get it done.
The only caveat I ask, if something like it gets super cold and flows drop, and you go to Powerhouse 2 priority, then you do something like that.
Then, yeah.
Yes.
When you drop the night gate, how much flush flow do we have?
Exactly.
I'm worried.
Leakage?
I mean, you dropped, leakage.
It's not a tight seal by any means.
If you go down there. In the channel down.
There's enough flushing flow leakage past there to flush anything out.
Okay.
It's just stopped.
In the channel downstream.
Right. Down below the gate.
There's flushing flow enough to flush fish out or ship stuff down.
Two or three winter steelhead stranded.
Flopping around in the dry.
Yeah. No, but there is a significant. There's probably, I would guess, 2 or 3 inches of water coming out that all the way across the sill when we've got it jacked up. We don't close it all the way up with the chain gates and seal it.
That's a good point.
Good.
If we open and close, you could get fish stranded.
Okay, so 1 hour, 1 hour opening midday. We'll fit that in both those days if needed.
Forced lunch.
Yeah, to force everybody
force
to go
lunch.
I'm
yeah.
sure we really have to force yeah. these guys
yeah.
to take an hour lunch.
Okay, thank you.
4.3, emergency generating testing. The opening is Philly Gates at Lomo, 23rd of March.
Yep.
Set both yep. powerhouses.
Periodic maintenance required.
We're good.
2 hours of spill, 23rd. Everyone's okay with that? Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you're only going to do it for it? You might have the gates up a little higher this year.
Yeah.
And then ice installation of trolley pipes.
Yep. Trolley pipes. We're preparing to install trolley pipes both on Unit 1 and Spill Bays 5 and 6. And that we intend to move forward on that during the week of the 14th of March. Everyone okay with that work? Yes.
That's all around.
Okay. Good.
Keep going. McNary spillway weir removal.
Yeah. So this is something I just wanted to nail down. Last year in the fish passage plan, we had some pretty broad language. It is. We ended up picking June 5, but the language in the fish passage plan was after June 1 and no later than June 20. And contingent on additional regional coordination. Wanted to nail this down. I certainly, we don't want to nail things down before it's necessary, but now I don't think there's anything, any unknowns out there, so I don't know why we shouldn't nail this down for this year. So apparently there was a discussion at Fitterwig where it was decided to look at steelhead counts, 95% passage. That date, based on what Ann Setter pulled, was June 6. And I recall last year when we discussed this here, the number of folks had asked Dave Benner to do an additional analysis just to check things. So I emailed Dave and asked if he could come prepared to present similar information this year.
Well, I just have the last 12 years of information. And 95% and it looks similar to what you have.
Excuse me, Dave, can you speak up, please?
Sure. I have the, I'll just pass this out. Last 12 years, 95% passage at McNary for steelhead. And it looks similar to the dates that Tim presented. All right, the average there is about
out of your answers down here.
Yeah. Do you have an average in here somewhere?
I think the average, I didn't have the average on there. I think it was a fourth.
No. So we have a fourth, fifth, and sixth.
Yeah, this is kind of messy. The change form that I hope to see would have the data attached to it, something that gave us the data.
And I emailed out a change form last night.
Got it.
You have it?
But it doesn't have much on it. It's pretty thin.
It is.
And it does have just a clarification. I didn't agree to this. It says it in here, but that wasn't what my email says.
Okay.
All I said was, this is what I was looking for, was an analysis.
Sorry,
I didn't really, I was looking for a change form to review, and then there would be agreement within FBO.
Yeah, I got so. It. I got it from Ann. I
know,
forwarded that.
I got to be careful what I say, I guess.
I got it. We'll change that. It won't say that on the
I think we're, this is what I wanted to see. I think that was my comment at Fitterwig, that we could do this, that makes sense, and then nail it down. The only thing I was thinking about is, do we want to choose the exact average, or do we want to choose the range, you know, like the outer edge of the range as our point? How much do we want to protect steelhead versus how much do we want to protect
Essentially, for those folks who don't have the change form in front of them, what I put down there was said preferably on June 6th, with the range being between June 5 and June 10. It was
It's like the work schedule, sort of thing.
That's for, based on work schedule and if weekends. And I was trying to get dates that we don't have to keep coming back and having this discussion every year. We certainly can review it every couple of years to make sure these averages haven't changed
so dramatically. 5 and 10 is based on work schedules and not on the data. Because the data said something like, I think it was 6, I think it was 3 to 8. June 3 through 8, I think, was
June 6 was the
average.
Was the average date
but
for 95%. And the range, essentially, yes, my date, June 5 to June 10, was just typically on this, we tend to be more conservative as far as leaving the weirs in. So I thought June 6 is the 95% date that 95% of your steelhead had passed. So if we give it a range of June 5 to June 10, it seemed like it's based on the date and then providing a little bit of wiggle room based on work schedules or if they're, you know, wind picks up and they can't do it on the June 6.
We're talking two different things here.
Six is the
date. One is picking the date. That's based on the data. The second part is a range. That's based on work schedules and making it easier for you guys. I don't have a problem with that. I do want to make sure that we pick the initial date based on the data and the rationale that goes into that. There's two rationales. One is to pick it on an average. The other is to pick it on the extreme and say, you know, steelhead, the latest 95% date is whatever. Or maybe the confidence interval instead of the extreme range. But, you know, there's how protective do you want to be of steelhead versus protective of false Chinook. And I'd pick steelhead as a primary species to protect here. So what I was hoping for was kind of a more detailed analysis of the data. And this is good what Dave has here, but
outliers,
yeah, I don't want to pick outliers. I want to pick like a confidence interval off of the average.
I pulled, and it, unfortunately, it doesn't have 2010 on it. Dave has that as June 7, but I have. You can take a look at this, and I can include this in the change form. Essentially, all the different from going back.
Look at that.
It's just the fifth. You know, the 5% date, the 10%. 50%, and so on.
What I saw from Ann was a average of June 6th with a range, confidence interval range. I think it was a 95% or 90. They were both about the same, of 3 to 8, of the 3rd through the 8th. Mm-hmm. So choosing a date, I would choose one would argue for the 6th, the other would argue for the 8th. That's the discussion I'd like to have. And then once we make that, then you can put whatever range you want around it.
Okay.
Because all we're trying to do is anchor this thing for you. But let's anchor it first based on steelhead protection, then for the project, you know, work schedule and all that stuff. I don't have a problem with that at all, Tim. That's
okay.
Fine. I just want to make sure we pick the date that we think is the most protective of the species that we're most concerned about. So that's what I wanted to get out to the group was, you know, think along those lines.
Looks like looking at sub-yearlings in that same time range, you're risking 1 to 5% of the, I mean, that's the period of running on there, so it's about the same trade-off. You're
right.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a big hit for subs, which they're doing pretty darn well.
Yeah.
And those early fish are pretty much the hatchery migration. So, and what I would do is I would kind of slide it maybe a little bit in more in protection of steelhead and pick that confidence interval date that's the outer edge of it.
The June 8th? Okay.
I know it isn't much.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was going to be, you know, wider than that. It's pretty narrow, but I'd still, so it's not a big deal, but I still would go to that end of it, I think.
So June 8th as the date, and then I'll give a...
the 6th or 8th, you're on that tail end.
I just haven't seen the data. You know, that's what I was hoping to see was the look at that. Well, there's no confidence interval analysis here. This is just ranges, and if you pick ranges, then we're out there in, what, June 18?
Well, I'm saying, June 18, you wouldn't use 201 because that was a low flow year, and you basically had no steelhead in the river.
June 12.
So June 12 would be the other outlier. Other than that, you're looking at 7th or 6th. I'm not going to quibble over a day, so the question is, would you go to the 12th? I'm going to say 1 out of 12, I'm not too worried about. Use the 6th, call it good, and then just plan on the 6th, or and then just plan, you always go later than that to 40 TSWs. You're protected, done, and out, and I'll get Crackenberry Boy out of here soon.
I'm looking at a calendar.
Figured you might be. I thought you were going to check this.
What's that?
I thought you were going to check this.
Well, basically what you're saying...
I'm going to, like, throw this thing at you.
So what you're saying, Tom, is June 6th or the next available workday.
Yep.
So
I'd go with the 8th.
Put your change.
Oh, I was going to
update it.
I mean, pick your central date and then work... Let Tim figure out what he wants after that. I don't care.
Okay. I'm fine saying if we want June 8th, say June 8th and then the next available work date or the next available work day.
I'm picking something that isn't even based on something that I have in front of me right now, which bothers me. That's my biggest concern. We don't have the data.
We need to get the change form updated, sent out, and then agreed to.
And then make a change based on that.
Make your emails, but tentatively.
Tentatively.
The 8th.
There it is.
Done.
The upper end of the 95% confidence interval, for the record.
So would there be a big impact if June 8th fell on a Friday and they didn't get to it until Monday?
Well, you have a big falls on a Wednesday.
One year.
No, I'm talking about the future. Or are we just talking about this year?
Talk about this year.
Or next available work day would all of a sudden, if June 8th was a Friday,
that's what I was just
then the next available work day would be a Monday.
And my question is, that three-day lag at that time, does that... I'm not looking at the numbers. Does that hit and impact the subs more? Okay.
It's not going, you need to see the data, though, and that's what you should have.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. So.
Show me the data.
Show me the data.
You can't handle
it. Sorry. These are the things we talk about here.
Yeah, I know. This is why I
You can have this wrapped up by tomorrow.
Okay.
All right.
Give it to me official.
Official, Tim.
Give it to those guys.
So did we?
If you got my name right, it'd be good too.
Yeah.
What is this?
Fred or Rick's? I don't know who that
Fred's?
Is. I guess I didn't agree because that's not
Fred Rick.
Well, Fred.
Some other guy.
Frederick
Von. Isn't it Fred
Von
Rick?
Fishman.
Hi, Mr. Fred Rick's here.
Fred Rick.
Who's Fred Rick's?
Who's Fred, anyway? Who is Fred? Whose boss is he?
Yeah, that was
good. Yeah, who's your boss? Who's your boss, Fred?
Your boss.
It won't do you any good.
Did you recommend then, once you have your data in front of you, picking the last day on that 95?
I would pick the last,
which is June
95 8th. Conference interval. I'd pick the last that date.
And so I know everyone can review this change form when it comes out. When I put in writing the last day of the 95% confidence interval, which is June 8th. No, is everyone good with that, or do you prefer it to be closer to the 95% average, which is June 6th?
You get the average. And you
don't care.
I don't. I would favor what you just said, as long as the data doesn't show some huge impact.
Favor June 8th.
I don't think it will.
Well,
Gary comes there, right?
You're not.
Yeah, I was trying to simplify it, but
so the other thing is, I'm thinking the TSWs are more beneficial. They're probably beneficial for subs at that time of year too. So I don't think it's a horrible thing to leave them in a little later.
Split hairs here.
June 8th.
All right. Yeehaw.
And it's up to you to set your range around there. I don't care.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
It's going to say June 8th or the next available workday.
That's fine. Okay. That's absolutely fine.
Absolutely fine. Thank you. All right, our next one, number 7 is the, or 6 is the Gantry 7 Rehab at Bonneville. Ben.
7.
Yeah.
Gantry
Greens. This is scheduled for next year, so it's going to be popular as well. Scheduled for next April. This is...
What is 7? Remind us all.
Intake. Through September.
Intake Gantry Powerhouse 2. So the 90 deck.
The 90 deck gantry for Powerhouse 2. Oh, yeah. Okay.
For VBS.
VBS, STS.
So right during the highest part of the flow, debris. Well, maybe not. It could be early for that.
You already agreed to the time frame.
September.
It's already been agreed to.
Like a mushroom in
that. That's on TV.
That is wrong.
Oh.
He's been holding that one.
But you had to bring that up.
He's waiting.
I'll pull up the audio. It's been agreed to. Ben just has a specific question regarding that time frame.
Well, we now disagree.
It's really in regard to the screens, because with our wind issues and our limitations on the tie crane, if we can't, if the tie crane's out, we have nothing. For 5 months.
For 5 months.
Yep.
Can we get a waiver on the tie crane?
Isn't that right?
No.
Why would the tie crane be out for 5 months?
It's out for that wind.
It wouldn't be out for 5 months. What we're saying is that a wind event, a wind event could preclude us getting in.
Pretty rare amount of
Yes, he's talking about the gantry being out for 5 months.
Yeah, that's already been agreed to.
So if something happens,
and the screen issues discussed,
or something like that, you don't have the capability to pull the screens up.
So the project said they could do it with the tie crane.
Why can't you pull up the screen with
yes,
the tie crane?
Yes, that is exactly what they said.
You cannot pull an STS screen with the tie crane.
Mommy and Daddy are arguing again.
I'm telling you.
The project said, and that was brought up in the previous discussion, that they could pull it with the tie crane.
Oh, yeah, two cranes.
Well, they may not want to, but they can do it if they need to.
A dangerous situation, because you're tying
the units out of service
to try and pull this up.
Yeah. Switch powerhouse priority.
Maybe. I guess what I just want people to think about the situation, because when that happens, we're going to have a limitation with our April through September. And it's a little bit like the roof situation. We need good weather to do it. That's why it's not.
You can't pull that thing in the garage?
That would be nice.
I didn't think it that much.
So,
mark it out in the
I don't think you're going to get a solution here. So.
You're taking a big risk, that's all I can say. That's a huge
and
risk.
And you don't like it, obviously. Neither do we.
So if we have a repeat of, what was that, 2000?
So let me ask the question again. Why is it these dates?
It's a weather. It's everything from electrical to painting to everything else they need.
But why wouldn't the fall be better than the early spring when it rains a lot at Bonneville?
Well, they need 5 months. So wherever they put that, they're just trying to figure it out.
Before, it was supposed to happen this year, and they didn't want to switch
about
it earlier
October,
because of the Washington Shore
July
outage.
Through November, June through October.
Next year, when we're not doing a performance standard test.
Yeah, this is really a big risk. I mean, you're taking a, this could be, you could have a screen disaster. You could have a debris disaster.
Yeah.
It's not like we haven't had that in Bonneville. And you're doing a performance test this year and next year, probably.
They picked this window because they thought that we would want the gantry crane for winter maintenance. I can pull up the old minutes and go through it all, but at that time, because it was going to happen this year, we thought it would be best to do it during the fish passage season, because we needed the cranes operable for the winter maintenance season, and then it should be back in time for winter maintenance next year for the DSM. Now, if you would like to switch the timing on that, we can do it. It didn't happen this year because they could not find a suitable contractor.
And you're saying we talked this thing all that through
last?
I'm going to have to listen on the tape.
July or August. I can send you the
minute.
Of the when? Of last year?
Yeah.
That's when we talked about this?
Yeah, we talked about it, but I didn't remember the tie crane not being an option for screens.
No. The tie crane was an option for screens. The project isn't thrilled about it, but in the event of needing to pull out a screen, they can do it with a tie crane.
Okay.
The PM had already discussed this with the project.
You guys need to get that worked out.
Yes.
So if the project is changing their mind on that, then that's something that the PM needs to be made aware of.
It's happened once, and they don't like to do it because it's just, it's dangerous.
It's not as controlled as having a
it's a two-crane pick in the same slot, and they just
wedge things.
Do that. Yeah. It's just hard to do with multiple signalmen, multiple cranes.
But we need to have something, because you can't have that long of a period, especially in June, where you couldn't pull a screen out. You have to have something there.
And it even affects our cleaning of screens.
Yeah. Well, that's what concerns me the most. I mean,
well, cleaning of screens. Plus, you have your run. You have your run time on the STSs. You know, you're supposed to, after 77 or 20 hours, you're supposed to
bring
pull
them up
and inspect them.
Inspect them. You get rips.
Even though the motors are running, you may have a torn belt. Or, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
It's a difficult thing. I think
not
the core needs. I mean, I haven't been part of that group
testing.
Yet. Yeah, and we've just kind of been thrown in the mix. We've got to have. The Corps got to have a better position to come back on this. So.
Well, I mean, the fact that it is a performance testing and we're not going to be able to clean screens is not good.
No.
Oh, no.
That's kind of a waste of money.
I mean, if
it could be if you had a problem.
Yep.
You know, something that you can't normally.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we'd still be able to use a tie crane to clean the BBSs. It's the cleaning. It's the any issue associated with a major STS screen.
We can clean the STSs, but we can't. We won't be able to use the backer screens because we won't be able to take that thing up if the wind's an issue.
If you guys can push it, I would recommend pushing it a year.
Yeah, I would push it a year. I think we need to take that back
so
and
pull the STS, keep it in the slot.
Put it in, inspect the performance standard test.
Yeah, just right back down to the,
or can it be done later in the season and take a risk on November weather?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure what.
It's going to be a problem. Take up your backer and move it.
They have to wrap it.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that before. I mean, that's for painting all that stuff. But November is about as likely as April to have heavy rain at Bonneville. Even May.
Yeah.
This is like
we're going to have to look at alternatives.
Who's the PM on this one? Is it Schmidtke?
Yes.
Okay.
What vital use is the crane during winter maintenance? Now don't laugh at me. What is it?
Pulling
STSs
up.
DSM2.
All the way.
Pulling STSs up.
Yeah,
out of the slot.
It's all the stuff.
Out of the slot. Okay.
I'm going to go back and listen to these minutes because I can't imagine making a choice for winter maintenance over the fish season. That doesn't make any sense.
At the time, we may not have had the tie crane back.
Last year you did.
I sent them to you. Was it last year? Was it the year before that we discussed this? Because I know they came at us with this very early as far as taking Gantry 7 out. Mm-hmm. We had discussed it.
Well, let's look at the minutes, review, get them back out. We're going to have to talk to the project and the project manager about this whole schedule because, I mean, with the performance test coming up, we might have to push it off.
I mean, another question, just out of curiosity. If for some reason we did put off the gantry rehab until July to September or October, November, whatever that might be. Can you do the work you need? Is it possible to tent off the areas of the crane to keep it dry for painting or whatever you need to do, or electrical?
Yeah, that's what Tammy was saying.
I think they're going to have to anyway because they're working
very
close to the fishway and the gate wells.
There's spray or whatever, but it's going to rain. You know, it's Bonneville.
Exactly, and they're redoing everything on it. They're
it's going to rain 3 out of the 6 months, no matter what.
Yeah.
You only get 3 months of dry at Bonneville. It's just the rule. No, you look like Bonnie and Clyde. It's Bonnie. Where's the gun?
You know what? I have better hats than this. I will start wearing different hats to just because you guys always
make me stare at all. He's been staring at all.
You must look like his mother or something.
Holy.
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins had the flower that stood up.
Dig it a deeper hole.
We're going to work on that rehab and come back.
Call Bonnie from now on.
How about head gape rehab? We got any good news there?
Yeah, nothing but good news. Actually, that was not bad. That,
it can be fixed.
It is fixed.
Oh, hey.
Well, temporarily.
Okay.
Fish unit, they put a dip tape in the head gape slot, came up with oil on it. Let's see, that would have been the first. 7 or so at night.
Yeah.
Shut it down, closed offices, went to fish unit, one fish unit operation.
proposed north upstream entrance. Basically what it was is a low pressure to return piping for the hydraulic oil, which is like 100 PSI or something. Not the high pressure one, which is like 2200, which would have, that roof would have dropped a hissy. So it was better than it would have been, but they looked at it, it was just like corrosion. I mean, not, nothing went wrong, it just
ate through it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So their concern, of course, is now.
Yeah. Now the other one could be as thin as.
The other one is probably the same.
I'm seeing my house.
We did two on the other fishing. We did both head gates this winter. Rehab them, so they're good to go. And I just wanted to bring it up because they're gonna want more time to do those fish unit head gates this winter when they go to do the next two.
They're going to do two. Okay. Why is that? Why is
they were able to do the two this past year because they had the extra time. Because we went in and we were okay to do the extra, the early work because we were going to do the lamprey work.
Right.
That didn't happen. They got the fish units in hand a month early. Uh-huh. So they were able to do those two head gates. Without that being the case next year, they won't be able to do both. So the concern is this, of course. Do we do one and hope that everything doesn't break, or do we ask for more time to do both?
Okay.
They'd like to do both, obviously, just because this is not good. There's 150 something gallons, all contained to the slot and all removed. But
yeah, it's not good.
And when you say both, you mean both low and high pressure.
Yes. Well, no, I'm sorry. I mean
both head gates.
Both head gates.
Now, these head gates, these are, there's one head gate.
There's one head gate per fish unit.
Oh, okay.
There's one fish unit done, both of those two.
There's two head gates per unit, right? There's one per slot.
Yes. Yep.
So what you're talking about is taking one fish unit out next year early.
Yes.
And leaving the other fish unit running. We should be in good shape.
Should be okay.
It should be okay. Yeah.
Just
and I'll see this as
a one unit operation in what, mid-November?
So how early? Mid-November?
I would guess the same, probably.
I think we did what, 15 November? November, something like that.
Take one of the, which fish unit?
The F1.
F1 goes down mid-November next year for head gate work, and then we get it back.
We go to a one unit operation middle of November, still meeting criteria, probably the north upstream entrance closed.
Right, yep.
We maintained this past week. It was out for a week.
Right, I saw that. So, I don't think that's an issue for that time of the year. You got good. Pretty low passage.
Okay. Powerhouse 1, unit prior operating range.
Don't have any handout, but I can kind of give you the sequence of events that we're working through. Right now, there's a white paper that's being developed for the Powerhouse 1 unit operation change. I kind of reviewed it with Gary on the phone the other day. But more or less, it lays everything out. And the reason it needs to be more detailed than just kind of throwing a new operation out there for people to chew on is that we're setting a precedence with Powerhouse 1 because this is the first time we've asked to move out of the sacred range of 1%. And so we want to do a little more due diligence to make sure we have a good path of progression, a good data set to show people why we're asking to move out of it, why we think that it's safe to move outside of it. And so there's a little more detail being put into it. So this white paper is, I should have it done by, I'm hoping, middle of next week. I was waiting for new data.
Did you get that from Bob?
I did. Okay. And he sent it to me, but my mailbox was full a couple weeks
ago.
I got to bounce back. So anyway, I have a new data set that I wanted to include into the data. But in a nutshell, what it's going to say is that we have evidence, biological, as well as this bead data from previous years, is saying that an operating range above the upper end of 1%, what we call best geometry, which is about 1.8K higher than we operate now, is an acceptable range to operate the Powerhouse units. The lower range, so what we're doing is we're not making the range any bigger, we're just shifting it. Okay, so we're not going to operate the lower end of 1%. We felt was not a good hydraulic scenario for fish. So we're just shifting the range. So we're not expanding it, we're shifting it, but we're shifting it outside of what we call quote-unquote normal 1%.
So it's probably an expansion, really, because of the lower end. Here's the deal, I guess. The lower end we looked at in the model, and bead strike data, it looked pretty poor, real poor. Even at peak, it didn't look good. Davidson's advice is you don't want to do that. But we're going to leave that in as the floor. Mm-hmm. The difference between those two is only a few tenths. It's like 0.3K or something like
yeah.
that.
Difference between what two?
Between the low end of 1% and peak. Very narrow.
Really? It's a very steep curve. It's about 300-400 CFS.
Wow. But the difference between the upper end of 1% and best operating point is about 1.8.
So yeah.
that's quite a bit larger. So in that, effectively, the range does get... The operating range does get wider
on the upper end because
up.
The slope is so it goes like it's this really steep and then it drops off like this
and slower.
So
the hill diagram.
You'll have a diagram.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Yeah,
yes, I will. It's not a bell curve. Let's just put it that way.
So what it'll do is it could increase the capacity of powerhouse one by about 18 kcfs. I mean that's one thing. So involuntary spill can change that much. Now, I think Dennis brought up is that does help with gas, but
18K, you know,
it's not a huge amount, but it's still significant
sure.
amount of flow. So there is that shift, but it gets us away from that what looks like a really poor. We don't have a lot of fish data to support that. We do have some fish data though from the direct.
We have the direct, and we have the
radio tag studies.
And so, we can include that data.
One of those data points was at the best operating point. So we do have some fish data from actually operating at that upper mm-hmm. beyond the 1% from those, and it showed good survival. And the thing you start worrying about when you get up to the higher ends is pressure. Actually, even going beyond the best operating point up to the generator limit still looks pretty good, but you start worrying about pressure at that point, so we're not advocating going there. But sliding this up, the range up, does look like a better operation for the project, I think. And I mean, remember, there's no screens, so we're running a lot of fish through these units.
Nice. So how does the pressure change with this shift?
Has the pressure changed for this shift?
How does the pressure?
It goes up. So, I don't know. Ed, can you answer that better than I can? But you get a.
Well, we'd have to include a table in there to show nadir pressure, the difference.
Do we have that?
Oh, probably do. We could find out. So we should be able to show something in there. I mean, if we could show the pressure difference, but I think what we're saying is. And a lot of it has to do with bead strike and flow data, is showing that you have a very good pathway
open,
of
open geometry. I mean, it looks good.
Looks really good.
I wouldn't worry about pressure.
Pushing more flow through the same hole.
That's efficiency.
Right. You're moving up the cavitation towards the cavitation. But you're not there yet. As you push your more and more flow through these units, and you start to develop cavitations. Because you get more velocity through there, and the difference between more velocity and zero pressure areas, you start to cavitate, but not here. But that's what I'm saying. I think what I'm saying is you start to see more pressure drops across the blade.
Right. That's what I understood that.
But a lot of it's on the suction side of the blade, and not a lot of fish. It depends on where your fish are traveling, but not a lot of fish travel on that suction side of the blade. So,
I guess I think it would be important to touch on this issue.
Oh, sure. And that's part of the white paper. It's going to outline a lot of that. So the process is internally it's going to be reviewed. The TSP, the Turbine Survival Group, because they're such a key component to this, are going to review it as well. And then it's going to go out, the white paper, for people to look at.
But I would recommend, because we're in the season, and we've already made, I've made my suggestion,
right?
That you put out a change form along with that, so that when it comes out,
it will.
Let's have the change form and the white paper attached,
right?
So you can get the discussion.
We'll put a recommended change form in there. Best case scenario was we wanted to get it in the fall this year, but we didn't.
Yeah,
but there is a pathway to say yes. The technical group is recommending a change. We put it through the change form, the FPP, and it gets accepted that way.
So you're talking about implementing this year?
Yes.
Yeah, as soon as possible.
Study.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that we're not going to be able to test, really. You know, you get enough fish and then do two operations, I doubt that we'd see any difference, just because you don't have enough fish through it. You know, it's the power of a test sort of thing.
But we do have to go on this bead data and the best geometry data.
Right.
Lends credence to a lot of, you know, it's, and then specifically looking at the model and then looking at that bead data. These are places where we make decisions on best geometry, best flow conditions, specifically looking at the model.
Yeah. I mean, that's the bead strike information alone will tell you you don't want to do this. And I see how that's any different than we look at, you know, spill patterns and judge predation rates. We don't know specifically the losses there, but we know it's not right, so we try to stay away from that.
Yeah.
But what I would like to know from the folks in, you know, around the table is what the thoughts are on going outside 1%. And, you know, I don't know if anybody's... I will say that it's allowed... I mean, the biop does say that we want best operating point. We want the best survival point.
Right. And it doesn't
say... Don't say 1%.
Right.
That's gone.
Yeah.
So it's not a biop...
Right, and it does lend credence to moving to best operating point,
which
we found that now we have these new MGRs. Best operating point, we think, is outside of 1%.
Right.
And I think we have to drill down and get down to that. Oh, you can't run outside
right.
of 1%.
That's what I'm concerned about. There's a knee-jerk.
It's like turbines chop
that.
Up fish. It's in that same.
Well, we've pushed the 1% range since 1990.
Right.
Just looking at you guys and wondering what
it's ingrained.
Yeah, it is. It is ingrained. Yeah. I'm wondering what the response is going to be here.
And that's why the
MGRs, we'll probably not get to raise this issue for other units. We'll probably have a longer discussion that has much bigger implications. I'm wondering, how does this factor into Powerhouse 2? Because we were supposed to change Powerhouse 2 unit operations. Is that done?
Powerhouse 2? Oh, I mean for... operating range?
Soft constraint. Yeah.
There's a soft constraint.
It's the constraint thing issue.
There's a soft constraint for Powerhouse 2 operations.
Well, how much did that impact hydraulic capacity? That
would narrow it.
Narrow. Yeah. The Powerhouse 2 soft constraint does narrow
it. It drives the bottom up and the top doesn't move, so
right.
It narrows it. So
right. It,
this
it
would
narrows
help.
The lower end.
This would help. Balance that.
This would help kind of offset it because we're picking up a little bit more capacity at Powerhouse 1. Well, 18, that's almost 2 units worth of water. So
it is. That one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty significant.
So could that change the flow characteristics of the river?
I wouldn't say. I mean, you may have a little bit more flow over there. I don't think it's going to change the flow characteristics too much more.
It's going to spill across the whole powerhouse.
Yeah, I mean, Powerhouse 2 would be prioritized anyway.
So this is going to be great for Lambert.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
I wasn't going to say
you
that Gary
should be just
right
on
Gary.
One out
put the cherry on the top.
You want me to write my white paper? I will. It'll be as good as your white paper on the delay of
so
installation.
More to come. But
you want to do some horse training? You want to do some horse training?
Yes.
Yeah.
Close all the orifice gates on
P2. All right. Let's. We'll wrap that up and we'll get that white paper.
The white paper. I can finish it next week.
Soon. So now I'm going to go down to the next item.
Quickly.
I'm going to jump down to.
Collection channel problem to me.
Okay, I haven't heard that.
All right, you guys. Enough.
I do have two.
We've got two from Gary, and you've got two. Gary's is Ulicon counting and marine mammal standardization.
Am I on?
You're on.
I'm on.
Good. We have an 8-hour meeting.
Ulicon counting?
We need Ulicon counting at Bonneville Dam.
Yeah, all the dams.
So, Ann, where are you?
Especially yours.
Ulicon County.
You guys are kind of, who's in charge of count?
Fish count contract.
Fish count contract comes out of Walla Walla.
We're kind of both of us, though.
Yeah, so because they've been listed and because Bonneville Dam does pass Ulicon to some degree, we've had, I mean, it's what, 1988 or something like that, and then 2005 we had Ulicon pass the project. I've been asked to ask you guys to consider
is it in the buyout?
Adding
the UConn consultation?
I'm not involved in that.
That's
it? Yeah, I just became well,
Greg,
part of it.
Greg did.
We just
Greg
did
in our
a
section did a consultation.
Yeah. I haven't seen the buyout on it, but yeah. Anyway.
Did you see that?
I haven't seen the buyout.
Okay.
I just thought the people who were doing working on that asked me to ask you guys, so I assume that there's something in there on Bonneville Passage. I'm sure there will be. I know there will be. I'll say it that way.
So you're saying
I haven't seen it, but
counts it by.
So it would help to have at least some idea of if any. I mean, this is not going to impact, I don't think, anybody really, but under some years it could. I won't even say that because of this present population, we'll probably never get to what we had in 1988. But in 88, we did have a lot of fish. I mean, we had thousands moving through the project.
Got any base counts to compare it against if we started counting now?
Base counts?
Lots of zeros.
If you have no counts previously, then you have no base.
Well, you just said thousands. Okay.
Yes, from smoke monitoring.
Oh.
Then they will continue to count them if they see them. That's part of the incidental. But what we don't have is
thousands of juveniles you're talking about.
They're adults. They were adults.
Did you get that many actually passing the windows? Because I know you saw tons of them.
I don't think many were passing the windows, and that's the question. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, and so if you know they are a listed stock, more listed than lamprey.
So, that's because no one likes you, Lacan.
No one likes what?
Smoke smell?
I love them.
I think
no one likes you, Lacan. You get unlisted.
A little candle fishing.
Right.
I ate a lot.
You see what happens when you get listed? Nothing happens.
Is there a critical habitat?
Well, I see things happen.
Title right, so it stops at bottom. Is that right?
Well, but see, in the paper they said that. Their range did historically go past Bonneville because there was numbers seen above.
Well,
Bonneville.
there's an incidental take statement too. I mean, Bonneville does take, has taken, and can take.
UConn.
So,
we've seen them at the smolt monitoring facility, so they have to be coming from upstream.
Do they go up and then come back?
Well, down. These are probably going up. These are adults
that
we saw were adults. So. Juveniles we haven't seen, that'd be something the smoke monitoring program would have to look for. But what we're asking for is for the in the count stations, if they see them, jot them down.
Record.
Let us know they're there.
We can put it as an action item. I'll bring it back next month.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
Great UConn.
So
Just at Bonneville.
Add that to the task. I know they got a lot to do.
Marine mammal marking.
I'm going to give them more to do. The other thing we want to do is start getting a better handle on marine mammal marks that we're seeing in the system. And the issue is that we have been recording marks, but it hasn't been consistent up and down the river. It's, you know, University of Idaho, it's CRITFIC, it's the count folks at the count windows. Everybody's recording it in some way. That method hasn't been consistent, and we're thinking maybe a little bit of training would be appropriate. At least maybe a better description of what they're looking at and what we're counting as a sea lion mark versus a harbor seal mark, for instance. So we'd like to get some consistency in that and maybe a little better, more consistent count or data collection anyway.
You're talking about protocol. Fish on fish, marks on fish.
Marks on adults, yes.
Yeah.
Not on mammals, no.
For the counters as well, or just traps and hands-on?
I think it's... Is it just the trap, or do we want the counters?
Well, the trap first. We haven't really addressed the counter situation, but I don't know if they're going to have time to sit there and assess injuries.
Well, they do. They do some of that, because we've got data from the counters.
But like you say, it wasn't consistent.
It wasn't consistent, and there hasn't been training. And you know, some folks say if it's a rake, it's a harbor seal. If it's a bite, it's a sea lion. Well, okay, you know, is that? You know, Jerry Harmon's pretty good about that. When he was here, he had that all down. So what I'd like to do is kind of get those ideas. People who've done this in the past, get their thoughts. The CRITFIC guys have been doing this for a long time. Kind of pool that resource. Get folks who've done this to say, here's what we think is marine mammal mark of this type or that type. And begin to, or what is a marine mammal mark? I don't care whether it's sea lion or seal. So we can start enumerating that, looking at losses as they go up through the system. What we're wondering about is how many of these fish don't make it to Granite, you know, really. I mean, you see at Bonneville, if we can be consistent in identifying the marks and enumerating those, then we can follow that up the system and look for...
This all came about because we're looking at our conversion rates, the proportion of fish that are detected at Bonneville that make it to Lower Granite, and we're seeing this like decline over time as fish are traveling over there. Just over the last 10 years, there's been less and less fish that have made it. Mm-hmm. So we kind of thought, well, what's been increasing at Bonneville, and that was the sea lions. Sea lions have been increasing at the same time, so our sea lions having something to do with this declining conversion rate. And then we started looking at the entry data, and there's just no relationship with entry data. It goes up and down, basically because the researchers are inconsistent in how they record the data. And so if we had consistent injury data, we could tell if there is a relationship between fish survival and injury rates.
So is this something that the Fish Passage Center can work on, or how are we going to get this?
I was hoping that Steve, Richards was on. Steve, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, you are there. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. I don't know how much of this that you guys could do at the count windows. You know, I don't want to add a lot of extra stress to the folks out there, but at least if they're good, do they keep track of this now?
Well, we do not. We're actually instructed not to keep track of it. However, I do show folks, you know, what the marine mammal bites and marks are, so they know that what's causing those injuries. It's the logistics, you know, it's pretty common to see this, and we're running out of fingers and space on the tally board to record all this information.
Right.
That's the downside. So we're already keeping track of clip and no clip, say for Chinook and Jacks, and adults and Jacks. But then if you have to go along with marine mammal marks, you know, that's gonna...
What, you know, wouldn't it make sense to start this at the traps? Because, I mean, even if you can't even say absence because you could have a mark that shows up on the other side of the fish. So I mean,
but most of these ladders you're looking at one side of the fish, no matter what. Yeah. You know, they're all...
I mean, we've already proven some of our tallywhackers only go up to 20. I mean, that's how we came up with this trigger for Bonneville. So I mean, it's
so it's not arbitrary.
Now we have it. Did you write that up? Six fingers. Well, it'd be a presence or absence. I'm just thinking that the count program is more consistent than research. You know, guys that are out there, they may or may not be out there. That would be easy for the researchers to take that data. They probably already do. It's just a matter of getting the consistency. But the problem is we may not have people working in the same time of the year at Granite that we do at Bonneville, and there's nobody in between. Maybe somebody in the mid-sea, maybe not, probably not. So that would be nice, but the consistency of data and to be able to follow this is almost a monitoring effort. Isn't very good. And that's what it needs to be. It needs to be more monitoring than just, this is a marine mammal mark. We know what that is. What we want to know is how many fish have these marks, how many of these fish don't make it.
Would you need a fish by species?
Yes. Yeah, probably would.
How about adult versus jack?
Oh, we could narrow it down. You're thinking don't do jacks, just do adults?
I was just trying to think if we could just eliminate the extra work of trying to figure out, okay, the clip adult Chinook with a bite versus a clip jack. With a bite.
Right.
You just have to have more, it's just the collecting the data. The hard
right,
part.
No, I understand.
And you're talking bites, not rakes, right?
Bites or rakes, I mean, what we could, I don't know yet. That's just something that we need to determine what we would want to count. But, you know, this would be it's going to be a sample no matter what. It's a subsample count, so we can pare it down to whatever makes sense.
I know you don't like getting into research too much again, but I think it sounds to me like if you really want to get at you know, what is the survival of a marine mammal fish from Bonneville to wherever, you'd want to get
get a hold of them at Bonneville, mark them, tag them. And
yeah, there are groups that do that. Yeah. University of Idaho has been doing that for since 96.
And what does that show?
And it shows this variability in the data because they were taking consistent data for a while, then they dropped, and it's kind of different how they take the data. How do they categorize what is a marine mammal mark? Is it a significant injury? They take a big
I think it's a training issue between the guys that are out
and
there.
So I think we can
train those guys rather than getting fish counts.
That's what I kind of feel too. I don't know if seeing one side of the fish, if you can really make an assessment of what's on the other side
of
the
fish.
It tells you what the impact is on how many fish you're seeing.
You might have a percentage.
Yeah.
The thing about counts windows is, I think it's a good index, but it's more consistent by far.
You have
far more fish.
And
it is much, much better. But you have other unknowns that go along with it that weaken the data. So.
And it's just a lot. I mean, you're going to have all that many more at Bonneville, for those guys to handle in your arm all along. If they have another button.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's more to do there. We just added Ulicon.
How about if the Corps writes NOAA an access letter providing space in the count room to provide someone?
Nice response.
Charity's something to do when you're retired.
Look at their video. Yeah.
Anyway, I thought I'd bring it up.
I mean, you laugh, but we have to make sure that this doesn't compromise the intended purpose of what the fish counters are there.
Well, that's an option, video or whatever, at a couple of index projects. Right. One of those McNary.
Well, that's an option, or, as I've said before, I'm not sure we really need fish counting between Bonneville and some of these dams, so maybe we could just convert those counters over to new metal mark counters. I don't know, what are we doing with the data at the Dalles or John Day? I don't really know. We put it in a book and say, hey, that's nice, but nobody uses it for management. So, we're using pit tank detectors more and more, but this is one way of getting at a specific problem that we think is going on in the river that we're not accounting for. It'll help us with our arguments about sea lion control too down the road. So this is what we're looking for: some way to enumerate that, some way to monitor that. And I think this is the group that deals with that kind of stuff. So something to think about.
I'm doing a write-up on it now, so I'll have some more information on what kind of information is out there, some suggestions for how we could categorize it better, and maybe some standards and stuff.
Bring it to the next meeting.
Okay.
Fair enough.
More discussion.
Yep.
Tom, what do you got for your two items? One item, three items, whatever it is.
Two items, and I'm one's really easy. Unit 11. When does that due back? I haven't kicked dams enough today.
I had forgotten about that. I don't even think it exists anymore.
Yeah,
it's a 7-unit powerhouse. With an empty hole. It's called the skeleton bay now.
Yeah, we're making a deep slot weir.
Yeah, I mean, it's a skeleton bay now.
Sweet. What are we up to?
My understanding is from the project manager that they're working on it now. How's that?
Good answer.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys can get that generator in there. You'll go to hook it up. There won't be any.
I heard it's supposed to be turned over to the project by September and restacked in October.
Sure.
Why 11?
Why'd you ask?
I haven't been disappointed in a while. So.
We're doing our performance test without it because we think we can meet it without it. So.
I know.
So that's. I will give you an even more updated next F-bomb. Good. See if that's still with the September-October time frame.
We won't hold our breath.
2013.
Next one.
Next one. Runaway. FOP language.
Pressure.
In the FOP, the draft FOP came out, they had some interesting language about barging, and it did seem to really gel with what you have in the FPP, so I'm encouraging you guys to get that worked out. Or at least tell people to...
You're talking about fish barging, not...
They talked everything. In the FOP, it was like all navigation. And we actually have stuff like at low mo about navigation. I would encourage you to send the message along to the FOP people, say, just see appendix 2.1416 or whatever of each low mo section. So trying to have...
Just to reply to that, I appreciate your awareness and such, but oftentimes, as you're probably aware, a lot of decisions to either include or exclude is just based on, imagine this. This is the way we did it last year, so this is the way we're going to do it this year. So I just wanted to
Yeah, the thing is, the FOP didn't say anything about this last.
What specifically are you talking about?
Yeah. If you look in the FOP, the draft FOP, they talk about navigation and concerns. If hydraulic issues become an issue, barge can do this, this, and this. It's unfortunately is not gelled with what you have in the main part of the FPP. And I would encourage you to not have two dissimilar sections. Have the FOP say one thing and have the FPP body say something else.
I'd be more than happy to talk to you about that more offline if you'd like. But
so this is navigation.
Well,
this is a navigation issue.
That's the problem. The FOP is very vague, and it says who is it? Barging traffic, and it includes transportation as well as commercial
and non-commercial.
And non-commercial.
That's another sticking point for another area.
That's gone.
And it says at any time if there's hydraulic conditions that cause problems, they can shut off spell ball. But we had specific language that we come up with in the FPP to deal with some of these issues. So I'm going, why does the FOP need to come up with its own brand new language when you have perfectly good language that the whole region has agreed upon in the FPP? Why does the FOP just say, if there's for a barging issue with regards to hydraulic conditions, see...
You've seen the final.
Right, no, and I hear your perspective. I mean, I think that argument regarding the FOP as to how much you include in there versus how much you tear off to other guidance document is...
Considering the FOPs and the FPP, it's kind of silly to have one part of the FPP.
I understand.
I'm just saying, you guys...
Well, that is a good point. I mean, I see a lot of things in there that...
I understand, but a lot of people view the FOP as somewhat of a quick go-to, you know, just as far as litigation goes, it's kind of a quick go-to. What do you grab with all those sticky issues that oftentimes are contentious, i.e. spill, et cetera? And so... good, bad, or indifferent, oftentimes, I know we've brought this up internally, oftentimes there's things in there that may be unduly discussed, but it's just at higher levels.
As long as they're consistent with the other documents that the Corps is producing.
We need to review these. Do you know what they're talking about?
Yeah, I do, and I'm also...
We said Thomas to Dan, I'm hoping he was going to talk to you
but... And what I'm trying to share in response is that good, bad, or indifferent, sometimes the reason certain language is adopted is oftentimes because of the way it was last year or due to sensitivities, and so...
That's fine, if there was, but there wasn't language like this in the FOP last year. This is new language.
Okay, well, we can...
So I'm just saying, like, get your...
Tom, which version did you look at? I just want to make sure, because
there's
I saw...
There's only a draft FOP.
The final that I saw changed...
We don't have a final yet. We're not allowed to see
the final.
I guess
I have to shut up then.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, you're not...
We haven't seen the final, so maybe you've corrected in the final. We haven't seen the final, so I don't know.
Record that. He said, yeah.
Shut up.
No, but I didn't hear that.
Use that note card. So I'm just saying, like, I'm hoping you guys are going to correct that. I'm just alerting you that some of us have looked at that. A bunch of people sent some comments in about that. I'm hoping it's being addressed. Dan didn't really address it yesterday.
Can you forward the email that you sent to Dan to me?
Sure. I had to go through my POX people, so I will get the copy from them and send it on to you.
Because, I mean, I'm willing to take a look at it. And
just take a look at the FOP and then see if you think that language matches the language that we outlined.
He's talking about dissimilar language, just repeat.
I got the point, but it'd be nice to know, like, specifically.
Don't you look at your FOP?
Yes, but it'd be nice if you already have an email written up to say, this is the language we believe is dissimilar. It would be helpful to see that.
Basically, the comment I just made, that's all we made, is just said, your FOP language, this section on navigation, does not match the FPP navigation language. Please make them consistent.
Okay. We'll take a look.
I think it's been changed.
I would be surprised if it hadn't been, but since we don't have a final, and since we're not going to talk about this till...
Yeah. Right, and you don't have a final, so...
It's gone.
Until you get a final...
Non-commercial.
Can we just give him a thumbs up?
Is it?
Well, no, it's worse than that, actually.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not done yet.
Take care of. No problem. Thanks,
we're
Tom.
Here. No, we're here to help. It's the government.
And we're one step ahead of you.
All right.
We heard you.
Yeah, that makes me feel comfortable.
So, we're going to go back into task group updates. We have a shad fishery task group update with Bob. You're meeting.
Are we going to do that after?
Who's we?
I don't know. Am I going to do that after?
Everybody's running. So, who's going to be here? Yakima?
Shad?
We can't do it without the Yakima.
I would be very surprised.
Guess we're not doing it today.
No.
Do you have anything, any comments from Yakima? Or?
No, I haven't gotten any.
So they haven't told you if, when, or how yet.
Well,
That doesn't give you much to talk about.
No, it doesn't.
No,
not
I
without.
Mean, Roger Dick was going back to talk to his fishermen to see if anyone was still interested or trying to modify and do what they did last year. I have not heard where that has ended.
Can you chase it down?
Yeah, Tom, could you?
Yeah, good luck on that one. But yes,
one of your member
I think
tribes.
If I asked, it'd be like, oh, yeah, the guy from the Corps. But if you asked, it'd be
actually,
like, oh, yeah.
The guy from the Corps stole something else.
Yeah.
Oh, if you ask him, this guy married to the person.
This meeting is over. Let's get out of here before it gets
not
worse.
Yet. I'm not done yet.
Instead of throwing cookies.
Because we have AFF mods, Tammy.
There's been no update. I haven't seen Cryptic provide their modifications.
So that was my other issue, but since I saw you have it fully covered. We've set our mods, and I think we're okay with the tank and plumbing to the tank. The Braille Pool mods, we understand that you guys found the supports when you guys took out, when you guys were redoing some of the drills, that the supports mat are pretty bad, i.e. need to be replaced, and I'm assuming you guys are talking next winter. So the only comment our guys had is that would be the ideal time to go in if we're going to make Braille Pool modifications to go do that and just like lump it in one big thing. So the question is, are we going to set a group sometime to talk about?
What kind of mods do they think can be made to the Braille Pool? We've talked. You'd have to redesign the entire Braille Pool.
You're going to have to take out.
Who's going
to
pay for that?
Structures. And yes, Mom and Dad.
No, you don't have to.
I'm just saying, is if you're going to redo all the supports for the Braille Pool,
new subgroup.
Yeah.
We're going to have the AFF Braille Pool subgroup, and you can chair it.
Oh,
there's the chair. There's the chair.
I'm just going to forward it on to my so helpful co-host.
Good job.
In my office.
I'm still waiting for Cryptic to send me their list of if they could do whatever they wanted to the AFF, what would they do?
I will make sure that.
Do we get to do that too?
Well, ours would be pretty simple.
Yours would be
back of a truck. Don't truck the concrete.
Well, I think we have to look at all options.
That'd be cool.
I think that would only be fair.
Fair?
No, I'm just saying. Like, if you're
and I'm the chairwoman, so I can do whatever I want.
Okay, a spoonful of sugar.
That's right. A lot of name calling coming out of your... today. What's up with this?
Oh my God! Just give me the list.
In the Braille Pool, you're gonna be tearing out anything. Most things are gonna be the structures. That would be a time if we're thinking about doing mods.
If I think of 1980s bands, I think of you right now.
Sweet.
Def Leppard's coming.
What band would he be?
Are you? No.
All right. So I'm gonna schedule a meeting for after the May F Pom. That gives you 2 months.
Send an email. It says that's when we're going to talk about the
journey.
Journey. Oh, dude.
Stop believing.
No way.
So on to the sturgeon test.
Other than being comfortably known.
Yeah. Well, I've hit a wall repeatedly, so.
All right, last but not least is the sturgeon task group update. Mr. Houseman, as the chair, had a meeting.
We did. We had a conference call. I think the point of it, or what we came up with, was really we just went over kind of the issue, what we're trying to figure out with what we can do, keep fish out of there, take the ladders down at a different time, what just brainstorm on the issue. And ultimately, it was just more data is what we need initially before we start making changes. So the group kind of wanted to get the full FPOM's feedback on how best we do that. We know we're not going to get monitoring and meaningful results back for this next season when we take Bradford Island down, so we'll have to do some. Tom had some suggestions for that. Perhaps we monitor with our ROV once a month or something and see some level of presence absence so we can get a feel for
chasing out with the ROV.
No,
I'm
won't
saying
be able to get them out. But we'll
I think the idea was use the ROV, and if you start seeing large numbers, I mean, the first thing is, can we bump up the dewatering schedule, or if we need to, and use kind of like a trigger schedule. If you see a bunch of sturgeon starting to be showing up, then you probably might be a signal, let's start dewatering now before we get a bunch more in there. Bradford Island, I'm feeling a little more comfortable because I think as long as we don't have a fish valve break, we have a fairly good flushing methodology there, I think. We hope. it's washing. I mean, basically, it's going to be washing shore. It's going to be blood. It's going to be. I don't know what we're going to do there.
What's your flushing idea at Bradford?
Well, we can flush using just diffusers starting up top and basically kind of piggyback.
Push it all the way down.
Yeah, push them down pool by pool. And it's worked pretty good. It didn't work.
For the ladder.
For the ladder proper.
But as you get into the collection
channel, the entrance here at
1-1 runs that. You can flush as much as you want out of it. But you're, I don't know how you can.
Of course, you can't really dewater the collection channel anyway, right? So it's not really
an issue. Well, and you know, that is where the issue is. The collection channel, it's not the ladder so much.
Yeah. Well, that was my point. So it's like, you use the RV, look at a collection channel. It's supposed to be washing shore. I mean, next year we're not taking
it. It is, and we're not going to do that every year at all. No. So.
Right. Well, and that was the talk, was like, how much of this work, is there times when we got work to do, we can just use divers? We don't need to dewater the whole way.
Right.
Can we do it earlier in the year? Because there's some thought came with the sturgeon events. They seem to be this migration, the sturgeon move up.
It's later and later.
Maybe you dewater before that migration starts. I mean, until we have some more data, it's going to be very, I don't know, ad hoc, groping in the dark, trying to figure out what the best option is going to be.
And the timing for us is, you know, if we go to, just keeping everything on the table, if we go to putting like a modified sled, something smaller, we still want to have a seasonal, some sort of data to tell us this is the time to put it in, because I know folks wouldn't want that any longer than it had to be.
Yeah, and some people put it in real late.
Yeah, if that was even acceptable. But anything we did like that, we didn't want to do without more information in hand, just so we're not.
And I guess the question is, would you guys even be interested in looking at something even there on the sleds?
Not the current ones, no. Absolutely not. But, you know, I should say for the spring season, no, I wouldn't want those sleds narrowed. But if you're using a special,
that was a question.
Not a sled, but a sturgeon exclusion device.
Sturgeon. Sled 2.
Sled 2, I guess
sturgeon
it's still an S.
Or a sled with a small S.
Okay. Small S, big S, okay.
Oh, jeez.
So the small S or the big S?
You don't speak me, so don't sell with us. Mr. Gaming.
The ROV stuff, too. I mean, if you got to take fish ladders, you got to drop it to.
At least I have a sense.
You got to drop auxiliary flow off. So, I mean, you're impacting.
As soon as you do that, then you're inviting fish in, and that could skew your observations anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like the shortest.
Why don't you on the call and come with a better idea?
What's that?
Then why don't you on the call and give me a
better
idea?
Because I think I was in Mississippi or I was probably.
You could call.
So, if we could get the minutes approved, then I can send them out to the rest of the FCOM group as the approved minutes from the task group, which would be helpful. And then they can read all the minutes themselves and see all your wonderful ideas.
We can do the ROV pretty quick. You know, it takes a day if we're looking at gradients and doing all this slow stuff. If we're just going to drop it in.
But the problem with the ROV, that's to look to see what you have. If you're trying to gather data to see how things accumulate, I'm not sure how that would work.
No, like, it would just be.
I think you just look to see what you got. Are we okay? Drop them.
You just got to do like a presence absence rule.
Yeah, that's what she would do. But
that's a concern to me because somebody can tell me exactly when they move in.
Right. And that's not going to tell you that. That's not going to tell you that they were there or not. I think probably the best thing you're going to do, this isn't every year, and so the other part of it is if you can minimize the amount of time the thing is slack. You know, so when you're ready to go in there, you take it down, you go.
How long was it slack?
But that we don't even know. We don't even know if they're in there, if they're coming in as it's slack, when it's coming in during orifice flow, or if they're already there.
How long do you have that?
I think you're going to have to close it off, go see what you got, and then make sure you have enough carts available to move what you got.
It was a while.
Yeah, it would have been.
I think you see those big sturgeon going and chase the shad, so you know they can get in there even when it's fully operational. Mm-hmm. Now the question is, do they?
Would they want to if there was no feed in there, though? Is the thing. If you guys look at I was kind of looking at the video when you guys mentioned it, and I went back to the sturgeon ball video of 2008, and I was looking at that.
Sturgeon ball.
You guys remember the great sturgeon ball? Oh, yeah. 60,000 or whatever they expected or something.
Yeah, Dennis
that was very intimately. Yeah, so, but if you look at that, I've never heard anybody mention this. You guys might have talked about it. You look at that, you see on the ROV, on the lower right corner, it's 55 degrees Fahrenheit as they approach that sturgeon ball. And this is February 19th.
That isn't accurate. That temperature is not accurate. I asked them about that.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not
that far off, though?
It's not, yeah. It's not.
I mean, that's a long way, because it was 39 degree average temperature during that.
Oh, I know. And that's why I questioned that way back then I asked them, I says, is this temperature on this video? And he goes, no, it's not even right, not even close.
Because I was starting to think if they have slack water in the ladder for a long period of time, it might warm up a little bit in there with no cool water going through there. Invite a bunch of sturgeon to go in there and relax, thermoregulate, hang out.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't warm up that much at all. It's still fed, that water's still with the lower ladder water.
Just a potential theory, though. I mean, if you had it open less time and there was cold water going through there, they may be less likely to... At least flowing water is going to keep them out of there, you would think, more than still water.
Yeah, okay. That's what I don't know. You know, that's the thing. If it does, there's something you can do. If it doesn't, then you're kind of stuck. The only thing you can do is put an exclusion device of some sort on it.
But even that, I mean, if you look at the fish on the video, there's thousands of them or hundreds of them. Anyways, they're smaller than the diameter of a hard hat.
Anyway.
Yeah, you know. Right. And so, how are you going to keep them out without you know, excluding Salmonid passage?
You can't.
So that's really not an option.
You kind of come down and minimize the amount of downtime between the time you take it down and you get in there and start working. And
I think it,
have enough tubs available to actually work them up and get them out of there. Strategy.
Well, the other thing too is you know,
call every fish manager,
enough time to drain, enough time. To, I mean, it's all a dance, you know, and it's timing, it's. Do you have enough bulkheads? Are you going to? Are you going to take it out in sections? Are you going to take? I mean, there's a lot of variables.
I guess,
to
did
this.
You guys talk about? I don't think the row is going to work. But if you had did some cameras or something like that, and actually
we did.
Use that to count presence absence.
Put distance in the entrances. I mean, that would probably be. That's what I kind of thought would be the easiest, the quickest, and easiest to give you. You know, the ROV's got a feel of you. This.
Right.
So it's literally bumping off fish.
Limitations in flow, too. So, which
the distance might not be perfect because of the where you have to put it.
Right.
Bubble.
What about a Pintec detector? Somebody mentioned there's a bunch of Pintec sturgeon, though.
Yeah. Tuxie Jones, I think, was mentioning there was some. Oh, we don't have protection down low.
Right.
Now, those are full duplex, though, aren't they?
He said they're full duplex.
Yeah.
And you've got half duplex. Antennas down.
Right,
for
the whole duplex has priority.
That's why I told him, I said, put your half duplex there, put half duplex there.
The problem I see there is unless you know the efficiency and the rate of tagging, you're not going to be able to estimate a population
right
there. So.
Well, you can just see, like, during a certain period, a whole bunch of fish are going through. It's
you
like,
can see that. Yeah.
You know, they're probably in there.
That's more than we know now.
Yeah.
Where would you put that at? What's the reason?
Right, the sled.
You have to put them on the sleds or something.
Dave, you don't like this idea, do you?
No.
Could you use straight hydroacoustics?
If we know we're going to water all the way down to the tail water, maybe those are the years to plant in early.
Yeah.
You're trying to minimize how much you're going to have to go. If you know you're not going to take it down, then you don't worry as much because you'll have some full new studios so that swap around there. I don't know.
I just don't want us to fall back on the just...
But you know, take care of it.
Salvage much protocol, because that's not what we want to
do. Did anybody talk about collating all the data we've had over the years as far as turbine units and ladder values and numbers of sturgeon and then try to get some sort of time frame based on that?
Well, we have
got that list of dewatering
systems. Yeah, have dewatering for the last since 2004.
We might even have some before that.
Yeah, I'm sure we do. So there's just one of those from 2004 to 2007 here.
We have the collected our fish. Our annual report.
It's still pretty low because we have. Yeah, we can go back to the.
The annual reports.
We can go to annual reports.
Had, you know, fish salvages from turbines, and then we had fish ladder counts that went. I mean, from when I was there, 92 to 98, it was just hardly anything.
We also notice the end units. Those end units are taken down. We get a lot more smooth.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking if there's some sort of time frame thing, you could say, well, you get nothing in obviously July or something like that, but you get it. Maybe you could start looking at it and say, well, in November you start picking up, December you see more.
Yeah, that's January, the only thing is if it's during the in-water work period, if you can figure out the lower time, and then do your outage then. And then slam in some gates. What's that, Tom?
Let me just get into water.
Yeah. Or at least put some.
And that might be something to look at if we think if units are down, that enhances the Sturgeon's ability to get his son to the entrances.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking sure you could put, if you could, you could design some, okay, if you shut the fish ladder down and you slam these gates down and you drop all the gates in, then you could stick your ROV in really quick.
Right. Can you put that
zip around and say, hey, do we have a lot of sturgeon in here, or did we... did we capture a bunch, or did we, you know, are they just trying to get in now that there's no slack flow? At least, I mean, you could build these panels, you just slide down the slot, and they pick them up with the crane and drop each one of them up.
Well, there's no flow, they can be fairly...
Yeah, I mean, they can be fairly light and fairly porous, I mean, just as long as they're big enough to stick in the
slot.
Where's
those old aluminum ones at?
The old sleds?
The old sleds.
Huh, I don't know.
Melted
down, pop can now. But, I mean, there's ways we could look presence, absence when we do a major dewatering. I think that would be a good thing. I am still in the camp that the sturgeon are being pushed into some of these areas that they normally haven't been to because of sea lion activity. I mean, the only thing that's correlating more sturgeon showing up is always been the...
more sea lions.
I mean, yeah, more sea lions.
So are blackberry sills and, you know, big... Yeah. On the screens. I mean, it's just going up with time.
Yeah. Well, the thing that we've seen, though, is these kind of mysterious balls of sturgeon, or along the corner collector a couple of years ago, we had sturgeon show up.
Along the shoreline.
Those aren't sea lion driven. And right. Those aggregations are something we don't fully understand. But
there was that big one down off of Rooster Rock, too, last year. There's that side channel.
Yeah, that caused lots of trout gas. All the fishermen were down there trying to add the fish for
them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing these more of these congregations, but... I don't know, at Bonneville, it seems to, you know, if I was a sturgeon and I was looking for a place to get
nice
away,
place
I'd want
to
get
out
inside of something.
Yeah, so I hear you. That's
me too.
But anyway.
If I was a sturgeon, I would too.
Yeah. So, but I think, I mean, if we want to physically look to say that, do we have a bunch of fish we're going to have to handle, I think we've got ways to do
that. But not a sturgeon.
Yeah. The other thing is, Mike Langsley went to Power Planning Council in Boise and gave a talk about lamprey and sturgeon. You know, they were interested in the task force. What's happening? What's the Corps doing with sturgeon? And the other item was that what is the Corps doing for sturgeon passage? And so, you know, there's going to be more emphasis on, you know, what's the Corps doing to facilitate sturgeon passage? What research is out there?
What was this for?
This is Power Planning Council.
Council.
Yeah.
So why is it that sturgeon don't use the fish ladder?
Some do.
Bonneville used to use the fish ladders. I mean, the fish elevators to move sturgeon back and forth. Mm-hmm. It was done away with when the elevators got in probably disrepair. We've got data from the Dalles that the Dalles, what is it? The Dalles passes a lot. Bonneville hardly passes any. The states have really tried to isolate populations. You know, that's why they don't want us taking fish recovered from below the projects and put them above. They want to isolate populations now, so there's little or no mixing, you know, between populations anymore. But so anyway, for what it's worth, I know the Power Planning Council's this got on their radar, I think, here recently because. You know, sea lions are eating them, and they're just, well, what are we going to do?
Well, that's, you know, the Delta Argonia showed the population dramatic drop.
So, more to come. I'm sure we're not done with white sturgeon by any means. But
I think that was the best task group update we've ever had. Thank you.
It was. That's pretty good. I mean,
usually
it's better than the
chat
one.
I don't know.
He was going to have a meeting.
That wasn't much to meet.
But the meeting notes you said are out to be approved by the group, and then going to go out.
Plans. Pick them up.
Bring them up. Move them out.
Yeah. Yes. I was going to wait until the group were sure that I captured their comments right before I put it out publicly. Nobody's getting back to me, so I'm going to find one of them and send them out.
Can you spray perfume on those legs?
What? Are you harassing my cat?
He's been sniffing his shit for hours.
Long he had to smell it.
Thank you,
Tammy. Let's go work on our budget.
If it wasn't for you, this would be a very, very boring
story. Yeah,
and that concludes the FPOM meeting.